Tonight on The Download, we reload this week's news with Jeff Cohen and Kim Bellware, Chicago Tribune Inc. columnist Tracy Swartz, and live from Sox Park, Kevin Powell. Now, here's your host, a man who wants his toll road money back, Justin Kaufman.
Yes, I am in search of my toll road money. Let me put it that way. I had an awful experience on the Indiana toll road today. And I realized how much money that you end up spending one way to a South Bend, Indiana. And anyone who's listening to this that lives in the area knows what I'm talking about. To go out, hi everybody. We'll pick up right where we left off last night in the 10 o'clock hour where I was – welcome to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you. We got a great show lined up tonight, but I had to go out to a funeral today. My wife's aunt died, and we went out to Mishawaka, Indiana for the funeral. On the way back, it took 2.5 hours to get from South Bend to Chicago because there was a slowdown, construction one-lane slowdown, both ways. If you were on the Indiana toll road today, you know what I'm talking about. Both ways, one lane. That added about an hour. There was one point where I think it might have been a new Killers track, like a 4-minute track that started and finished, and I had not moved. I put the car in park. One of those jobbers. When you go, I'm done putting my foot on the brake. I'm just going to put it in park. And you know, stay there for 4 minutes. That's ridiculous.
Should have got out and started dancing like in La La Land.
Yeah, right.
The opening scene in La La Land.
So I'm like, well, maybe there's an accident up here because it was between LaPorte and Michigan City on the Skyway, the toll road 8090. And we got up there as the one lane. It was just a construction thing, road work ahead, turns to one lane. We get through it. We get to the end. And there's a truck at the end that is picking up the pylons that are blocking the one lane. And I realized at that moment that there were zero construction projects. There were no idling bulldozers or other paraphernalia that you would find. There were no workers. There were not even like unpaved. There wasn't even like fresh paint. It was just pylons blocking a lane. And I looked on the other side and it was the same thing. So I don't know if they're setting up or getting ready for construction projects that might start tomorrow or maybe finishing the fact that it was all week and this was the end of it. But they took their time. There were two guys doing both sides and an hour plus wait on either side coming in on a Friday at 2 o'clock. Yeah. So here's my point, and the reason I bring it up tonight is that I've decided I want to do a campaign to get that money back. I want iPass or whoever it is, whoever's in charge of the money. I'm sure it's privatized, goes to some Australian company. I don't care where it goes. I want my account credited because that's a $5 toll at the Skyway, right? When you get to the Skyway toll, it's another $1.75 to get to the Indiana toll road part. It's another $2.50 or whatever to get from that to South Bend, Indiana. So add that up, and the fact that you took my time. I don't know what that was worth anymore, but the idea that I pay that $10 and you would too for two lanes. I pay that $10 because I choose this road over 94, the free road, because that one's going to be more congested.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that they have construction projects that aren't construction projects, faux, phantom, shadow, ghost construction projects, and we're set back an hour plus on the journey from South Bend to Chicago. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's unacceptable.
It's infuriating.
It's infuriating. It's the worst. And all I'm saying is the way to fix that is anyone who was driving from 1, 12 noon, 11:30, I don't know when it started, to probably 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock, till they took the pylons down, should just be credited.
Have you read the terms of service for
not.
The tolls?
No, I'm creating the terms of service right now. You know what we're going to? Street rules. In this case, road rules. In my case, I'm going to lay it down. We're going to have a constitutional convention. And we're going to say these are the rules. If you have a construction project that brings it down to one lane and there is no active construction, not even we just took a break today, but instead some Chris Christie garbage or whatever that was today, then it automatically gives you a refund to the account.
Man, if you get this done.
Right, I'm a hero.
You are a hero.
I wanted to shout to everybody else. I wanted to get like a class action going to the rigs and the other people that were stuck in traffic. I was, hey, can I talk to you about a class action I'm thinking about?
Yeah. I mean, there will be statues built to you, TV shows, movies.
No, I just looked up Google Maps because I wanted to make sure that people who are going through the Skyway right now, I could tell them don't, you know, watch out for that. But Google Maps at the time showed me flashing red when in the area that we were at. It's not anymore. So they got the pylons up and traffic is flowing. So this is from something that happened earlier today. And I don't know. There's just at a certain point, and I don't like to use this platform thing. You know, the download is not a show that I'm having guests come in so we can try to get something. But I feel in this case, as a citizen, as a member of the society in the Midwest that live here, that use those and spend money, a disproportionate amount of money to use a road, there should be consequences if that road is not in particular order. And in this case, it was not in particular order for no good reason. I should get my money back.
Or maybe a gift card to Crazy Kaplan's.
I'll take a gift card to Hacienda's in Mishawaka.
There you go, yeah.
6-3-0 says bogus construction projects keeping Mike Madigan union buddies employed. Hey, this is Indiana. It's a different union buddy. Maybe you're talking about the union buddies he has across the state line. Politics aside, the idea that the toll road accepted my payment to use it,
yep,
and it was not up to snuff for me to use.
I think you have something
right
here.
Yeah. I think that there's. I mean, everyone's all focused on what's happening with the Taylor Swift trial. Yeah. I think this is much bigger. I mean, this is bigger than what I was complaining about yesterday, where I got a ticket when I never got the physical ticket. Woo! I am riled up today, Pete. And this is for all the drivers. This is for all of us. I'm gonna ratchet it up. I'm gonna get us a theme song. You know, maybe we can commission a local rap group to give us a, you know, take it to the man kind of piece. You know, work on it. So, something like that. All right, I'm done. I got all sweaty. Way too sweaty. But anyone listening right now, you know what I'm talking about. So, let's rally. Big show tonight. Jeff Cohen and Kim Bellware are here to reload this week's news. We'll talk biggest stories. We will talk winners, losers. Overreported, underreported, which story is going to be remembered from this week in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from now? I think we kind of all know where that's heading. Mitch Trubisky. Also, Tracy's going to join us. Tracy Swartz tonight, Reality Check. We had Reality Bites, Reality Check. We'll talk about reality television, what's happening with Chicago. Also, Kevin Powell's going to join us. Big, big showdown tonight. Not even a showdown. The Royals and the Sox used to be a showdown. But Ronaldo Lopez, the young pitcher who throws over 100 miles per hour, has been called up, and he was part of the Washington Nationals deal, and he's on the mound right now, making quick work of the Royals in the first inning. We'd like to see that. Ronaldo Lopez in the rotation for the White Sox, so Kevin Powell will join us to talk about that as well. And we'll play later in the hour, 10 o'clock hour, we'll play Never Have I Ever. Never have I ever been so angry at the Indiana toll road. Totally unacceptable. What can you do? You can fight. Right. 847 says, preach it, brother. Right. And so, I mean, it's one thing to say, hey, we don't have enough money in the state. We're going to privatize all this stuff. But there has to be some accountability.
If people were getting refunds for this, work would be get done quicker, I would imagine.
Absolutely. You'd have more faith in the system, society. You'd vote.
Mm-hmm.
You would become a productive member. You'd help your neighbors. You'd clean up trash in the park. I mean, it all starts from the little things that you expect back from the government that you pay for. and Wanovich in this case, and I know it's privatized. I know it's not a it's not a government entity anymore, but the government's responsible for that sale. So I don't even know who's the governor of Indiana, Mitch Daniels, whoever it is. It's like 5 years ago. Whoever took over from Mike Pence, I need my $10. That's how we're gonna roll. And I love that road. I have no problem. Someone said, never have I ever used the Indiana Toll Road. I love that road. It's usually great.
Mm-hmm.
I pay for that service to be able to go there without those kind of inconveniences. And I think there should be pressure applied to say that construction projects, even phantom ones like the ones today, should be done with that in mind. The fact that people are paying for this toll road. They're paying for this service to be able to go faster. It's like an express service.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the construction project should be at night or at off times or on weekends or whatever it might be. You can't do a phantom construction project at Friday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when people are trying to get out of town and go to. All right,
Horrible idea. Deep breaths.
I'm sorry. I'm losing it. I'm losing it. News, weather, and traffic tonight. Rob Martier and Roger Badish. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. And this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's carry out. Here today's top stories. You know, I woke up this week thinking to myself that the world needed more brink of nuclear war talk, right? I mean, Trump did say he wanted to make America great again. And when we were in the middle of the Cold War doing duck and cover drills and learning how to fold a napkin over our mouths to avoid nuclear fallout, that was pretty great, right? And then think about it. You know, Trump loves the 80s, right? No huge movement on North Korea except that the president was able to make a statement that A, he hopes that there isn't nuclear war, and B, it's not its fault if there is. Thanks, Obama. The big takeaway for me is unpredictability and the idea that Trump is using his erratic style to his advantage. If you were North Korea, would you believe him? Right? Hey, I mean, they watched The Apprentice, too. They're like, he means business. Call me old-fashioned, but for me, I like my international politics without the threat of nuclear war. I understand that North Korea is the aggressor, and analysts say that they have weapons of mass destruction. Oh, man, I just had deja vu. Where have I heard that sentence before? Oh, right. But I did like the reprieve from talking about bombs that we had for a couple years. It moved to drones. Right? We moved to drones. We got off the bomb kick. So now we're back to bombs. So, yes, protect America, but could you do it in a non-80s cliche way? Like a, I don't know. I mean, isn't already 1980s overkill? A lot of Wall Street stuff going on right now. Senate President John Cullerton ruined all the weekend plans for state senators. Aw, we were going to go to the beach house. Nope, they're being called to Springfield to vote on overriding the governor's veto on school funding. The tea leaves tell us that's probably going to happen. If they do so, then the chances that we will see lawmakers wheel and deal for a new school funding bill will probably happen next week. The lawmakers missed the annual deadline to tell school districts what funding they will get for the year. But, hey, at least the lawmakers are consistent. The state government's like Mel Gibson from Lethal Weapon. He's crazy, doesn't follow the rules. Then it quickly veers into off-camera Mel Gibson, where he's drunk and cursing. That's the state of Illinois right there. Jim Kirk is leaving the Sun-Times. You see this? The editor-publisher is getting into the old crosstown traffic. He's joining Tronk. Formerly called the Tribune. He'll take over with a fancy title on the digital side of the organization. Kirk will reunite with his old bosses, including CEO Michael Farrow. This is a good story because it harkens back to the days when these two newspapers would steal each other's talent on a daily basis. That kind of went away. So glad to see that healthy poaching is back in Chicago news. Now we need Fox to steal from NBC and ABC to steal from... And that's when it's just like... become Starbelly Sneeches, and we're like, well, who's what and where? No word if Kirk's going to bring Jenny McCarthy with him to blog about vaccines. Is that a dated reference? I date myself? I paid attention to the news 3 years ago? All right. In weather, well, it's not raining nuclear hellfire right now, so I guess that's good. Today's a win. In sports, the Bears lost their preseason opener last night, but no one will ever remember that noise. Instead, we'll remember the night we were introduced to the troubadour. Mitchell Trubisky showed us why the Bears gambled to take him with the second overall pick. He was not just throwing touchdown passes, but he was also scrambling and throwing on the run. And not once did he grab his helmet, roll his eyes, take a timeout, or cursing out a coach. Which I guess is something that not every quarterback does. I thought that's just what quarterbacks did. Trubisky showed us what a young QB could look like in Chicago. And I think I speak for all of Chicago when I say, me likey, right? Now the Bears stood pat in their Lovie Smith-like resolve and told us that Mike Glennon is their starting quarterback this year while Trubisky develops. But watching Glennon conjured up dark memories of the past few years of quarterback futility. Watching Trubisky, I don't know, I felt something. Did you feel it too? Don't be scared. It's an overwhelming desire for winning football. Go ahead. Embrace it. That's at 7. It's still early. The D was running around with a little attitude. Trubisky seemed to be running around with a little attitude. It should be more than if Fox and Ryan Pace lose more than 6 games, they're fired. Now it should be if Fox and Ryan Pace can't figure out how to make Mitchell Trubisky the starter on opening day, they should be fired. Right? I mean, if he comes out and has another great, even I would say even a C+, you're like, hey, I'll take it. It's better than the F that we saw in the first quarter yesterday. Dallas running back Ezekiel Elliott was suspended for 6 games, violating NFL personal conduct rules. He was accused of domestic violence. Second time in his career that happened? A young career. Yikes. Cowboys said all along that he wouldn't be suspended. Elliott's agents accusing the NFL of cherry-picking facts. It's worth noting here that there is no criminal charge against Elliott, so Elliott gets 6 games. All right, moving on. Colin Kaepernick. Well, doesn't have a team. So, and that's your NFL news. That's not Chicago Bear related. Let's keep going on the sports front. Can you believe we're talking White Sox before Cubs tonight? The Sox woke up the fan base with a sweep of the Astros. The win last night was Ryan Sandberg-like for young Yoan Moncada. Not only did he tie the game in the 9th inning with a home run, but he then won the game in the 11th with a walk-off single. How fun to watch Trubisky and Moncada, the future Chicago sports, both excel at the same time on the same day. And then tonight, the Sox welcome one of their future arms to the bump, Ronaldo Lopez. He's up. He's starting. Had a good first inning. Sox are on the board. 1-0. Lopez strikes out a lot of guys, throws 100, and he mowed down the Triple-A competition. He gets a tough start tonight, though, against the Royals, who are definitely still the Royals, just outside the second wild card right now, pushing the Indians in the AL Central. The Royals have a lot of guys who've been around, but they, too, have had some turnover. I mean, they brought in Melky Cabrera, so this is kind of like a reunion thing. But, I mean, the issue with the Royals is their pitching. I don't even know who's pitching for the Royals these days. Right. Is Paul Splittorff? Is he in the rotation still? How about a Dan Quisenberry? Is Quisenberry closing? And speaking of the best 80s baseball name of all time, is Buddy Biancalana coming off the bench? Maybe playing shortstop and late in the game? Buddy Biancalana? That's a Harry Carey favorite. Buddy Biancalana. Here it comes. Let's buddy Biancalana. Cubs in Arizona tonight for a big payback series. They lost 2-3 to the Diamondbacks at Wrigley a week or so ago. Now they need to return the favor. The Cubs throw big country John Lackey, who I think is still in the running for giving up the most home runs in one Major League Baseball season. But the go-to stat is that Lackey has never lost to the Diamondbacks in his career. He's 4-0. The Cubs have Lester and Arrieta going over the weekend. They come to this mid-August series with a one-game lead on the surging St. Louis Cardinals, who have won 6 in a row. They play the Braves this weekend, so, but it's the Cards. They'll mess it up. They'll keep throwing Adam Wainwright. Keep putting him out there. That's my Cubs will win it. And finally tonight, well, if you just saw this, you saw that Taylor Swift's case was thrown out. Taylor Swift's lawyers in the disc jockey groping case, they rested today and said, hey, this isn't really about us. It's about the radio station. And guess what? They dropped the case. There is no longer a Taylor Swift case in the courts. Wait, do you not know this story? Oh, let me explain. Taylor Swift, country star, took a picture with a Denver DJ shock jock who allegedly grabbed her buttocks. But Swift, pop star, gave the photos to the Denver radio station, Terrestrial, and they terminated the DJ, hitting the post. The DJ, acid wash jeans, sued Swift, bad blood, for defamation, most def. And Swift, we are never, ever, ever, never getting back together. Countersued for $1 after taxes. Closing arguments were scheduled for Monday, right after Sunday. But the case was dropped like a hot potato. There we go. Did you get it now? Did that catch up to speed? That's the carryout for August 11, 2017. Enjoy your weekend. We got cups of water over by the napkins. I mean, they're used cups, but the water's free. What else are we supposed to give you? All right, coming up, we'll check in with Kevin Powell. Talk about the Ronaldo Lopez, I guess, franchise, the era beginning down on the south side tonight. He's at the game. We'll talk with him. Also coming up, we'll reload this week's news. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
I just want to say thank you very much for doing the Taylor Swift story at the end of your carryout segment, because now I won't have to do it the rest of the evening. I appreciate that.
It's one of the dumbest stories in American history. I mean, it was fun listening to Judy and Violetta and Anna talk about it's a serious issue. I'm not saying the issue's not, but the idea that the DJ sued Taylor Swift, I love that she pushed back.
Right.
But the idea that he went after her instead of his employer, and that's essentially why the case just got thrown out.
Yeah.
I don't get it. And I thought about that when I first read it, too. I was like, wait. So it seems like a weird, like, celebrity kind of thing. Like, the DJ wanted some, you know, he wanted to get in the news.
Well, and I'm not above dumb stories either. I've done plenty of them. But this one was particularly annoying.
Yeah, it was. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Well, no fireworks yet, but definitely throwing heat. Ronaldo Lopez, the rookie, starting pitcher for the Chicago White Sox, has been called up, and he is pitching tonight against the Kansas City Royals over at Sox Park at the G-Rate, G-Field, G-Spot, whatever we're calling it. Kevin Powell, who you can hear here with Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantis every day from 3 to 7, is on the line with us as he is at Sox Park watching this phenom pitch. Kevin, thanks for joining us, buddy.
Anytime, JK. Appreciate you having me.
All right, so let's talk about, I mean, I would assume that there's a lot of people at the ballpark and people are interested in a name that they may not have known 2 months ago.
Yeah, it's not at the Yoan Moncada level that we saw 3 weeks or so ago, but I think there's definitely some interest because every time one of these prospects comes up, it's sort of the payoff to the losing, and if that really makes sense. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's a reminder that this is a rebuild. It's going to take time. So when a guy like this comes up, it's like, oh, that's right. We're in a rebuild. We're just not really a really bad baseball team. Like we're this is a plan. This is like all a structure in place for the future, for 3 years down the road, 2 years down the road. So I think people get excited when a guy like Ronaldo Lopez comes up. And you mentioned it earlier. The guy's throwing heat. He hit 100 miles per hour on one of his pitches, struck out the first two batters, and then walked the guy. So, sort of your prototypical start for a top prospect to come up. I'm interested to talk to him after the game to see if he, riding the adrenaline a little bit. But, we'll probably expect to see mid-90s from him, though, consistently.
Yeah, I mean, he's throwing right now. I mean, it's amazing to see when they show the close-up on him. He looks like a kid. He looks like he's 16 years old, but he is a young thrower. But I mean, what's great about him is that he's shown that he's got control and he can throw consistently at a high level. But when you get to the major leagues and you're a pitcher that your specialty is making people miss, I would assume that your pitch count becomes a problem. We've seen this with young pitchers who are strikeout pitchers, where it just means your at-bats go longer, there's foul balls, you're almost always going to a 3-2 count. I mean, there's a lot that goes – I mean, his pitch count's already up in the second inning over 40 pitches.
Yeah, I think for the younger guys, it's learning how to pitch and not just throw. There's a big difference. And guys like this who have such good raw stuff. I mean, you still see it with Carlos Rodon, who the White Sox still believe he was, you know, the first-round pick a few years ago. He has ace-caliber stuff. The problem is he runs into high pitch count. He'll walk from guys because they think they can strike everybody out with one pitch. But so a lot of these guys fall behind. And we saw with Lopez, he walked the guy in the first inning because he probably is overthrowing a little bit. But, you know, I think the big thing is learning how to pitch. Like, that that means something. It's not just go out there and throw as hard as you can. So Lopez showed that in AAA. As Rick Hahn put it, he was forcing the issue. They really couldn't say no any longer for the call-up. And, you know, that's some of the issues you see with Lucas Giolito, one of their top pitching prospects down in the minors still. He has some of the best stuff you'll see, but he gets into the same trouble. He walks a ton of guys. So I think the biggest thing for the younger pitchers is command. Once they can start consistently throwing strikes and get ahead in counts, they don't have to rely on throwing, you know, three straight breaking balls and then risk walking guys.
Well, as a Sox fan, it is so much more exciting to watch Ronaldo Lopez on the mound than the contact pitchers they have now. I mean, a lot of journeymen, Holland, Shields, Pelfrey, who was moved to the bullpen. These are guys that have been around. They've already done their veterans, but they pitched the ground balls. They pitched the contact. To watch Ronaldo Lopez play chess with a hitter like he just did to strike out the Kansas City Royal, he got him on a changeup. He brought it down to 82, 83 miles per hour, and the guy looked silly up there. I mean, there's something great for baseball fans to watch a pitcher who can throw like Lopez can.
Yeah, no question. I mean, that's why he's one of the top-ranked prospects in baseball. That's sort of how they put these lists together, is more of raw talent. So the players with the top prospect, it's not normally going to be some guy who's, you know, a Mark Burley type of crafty who throws 90 miles per hour and has good command. It's normally, okay, this guy has a ton of talent, but we're going to rank him really high because if we can work with him and develop him, he can be a dominant pitcher. And a lot of guys, they don't pan out. Most of them don't. But when a guy has as much talent as he does, as Giolito does, as Michael Kopech does, it's absolutely reason to get excited about it. And I know as Sox fans, I'm guilty of it. You know, you start to do the hypothetical thing where you think of down the road, okay, in 3 years, man, they could have Carlos Rodon as their ace. They could have then Lopez, then Giolito, then Kopech. And then, you know, so it's fun to think that way. But in reality, it's probably not going to work out. I mean, they have a ton of, you know, 10 of the top 100 prospects. Let's just say 30% of them pan out. That's still pretty darn good. They'll be just fine. So, you know, a lot of talent. I don't know if all of them are going to pan out. But, yeah, it's always fun when a pitcher like this can strike people out consistently with some real nasty stuff.
It's great also, you know, in mid-August as the White Sox are in the cellar in the AL and they're out of playoff contention to have this excitement at the ballpark at the cell. Do you see the Sox playing off of that and bringing up guys like Giolito or Kopech or others who might bring out the fans to see them sort of get a audition, if you will, at the major league level?
Fortunately not. And what I mean by that is, the White Sox understand this is a process. They're not going to bring somebody up to sell an extra 3,000 walk-up tickets just to get them up here. You know what I mean? Like, they get it. They're not going to just be like, they're not going to turn a player being called up into a marketing opportunity. Some teams might do that, but I think this, you know, it's all led by Rick Hahn. He's very level-headed. He understands the process. He's being very patient with it, but you know, they're not going to call somebody up just to call them up just to say, hey, Sox fans, we know we're 30 games under 500, but Giolito's getting called up tonight. They're not going to do that.
Yeah, but there's some value in getting these guys up here and letting them fail now so that they have some confidence going into spring training, right?
No question. I mean, I think we'll see Giolito next month at some point, a few weeks.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who else is going to get the call. But as you said, it can't really hurt to bring some of these guys up, but they're not going to rush it. They're just not going to rush it. They understand that it's still at minimum 2020 when they're competitive.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think they have a very, very reasonable plan put in place, and they're going to stick to it.
Well, here's a sports question for you, Kevin Powell. You know, okay, so Lopez is one. We talked about Giolito, Yoan Moncada. We talked about the White Sox being patient and developing. Just a couple blocks away at Soldier Field, we had Mitchell Trubisky last night who got the fan base of the Chicago Bears excited at Soldier Field at a preseason game. We understand that. But again, we heard coaches saying we don't want to rush it. It's develop. It's patient, all this kind of stuff. Is there any way that you see fan interest and fan excitement dictating some of these moves? Meaning, I want to know, like, I understand the idea of developing a quarterback like Mitchell Trubisky, but if he plays the way that he played last night, even if he loses, it brings a different level of energy and excitement and, I don't know, interest from sports fans, from a football fan. Same with the White Sox. If Moncada's hitting walk-offs or Lopez in the game, I'm more interested in the White Sox. So is there any way that that fan momentum, that fan push, pushes these general managers to change their philosophy?
I don't – you know, the thing with football, maybe, because if you have a really good quarterback, like, look around the league. If you have one of the top, let's just say 10 quarterbacks, you're probably going to the playoffs that year. No matter really what the rest of your roster looks like. You can call up Yoan Moncada a month ago, and everyone realizes this is baseball. One guy is not going to carry a team. If that was the case, the Angels would be in the World Series every year.
Right.
But they're not, because Mike Trout can't carry a 25-man roster by himself. So I think maybe in football a little bit more, because everyone's like, well, if you call him up and he plays the way he's been playing, I mean, he's probably worth five more wins than what Glennon would do, even in his rookie year, just throwing that number out there. So I think in football, and especially with the Bears, I mean, like the Cubs won the World Series, there's always going to be, and I feel like there's still more, I don't want to say excitement and tick off a bunch of Cubs. It's a Bears town, simply put.
Well,
so I
think with both the sides Bears, like, together, right.
People, you know, people are so desperate for a winning football team, and especially to have a quarterback that's drafted second overall. We've never seen that here in Chicago. You know what I mean? It's always like, okay, Cutler they traded for, or it's always like some guy they just signed and whatever. People get excited about him for, you know, a year or so. This is – Trubisky feels like, okay, this is a guy that we can – maybe if everything works out, he's our quarterback for the next decade, which means if you have a quarterback for a day, you know, things are probably working out, which means you're probably making the playoffs. So if a player is going to force an issue in – it would probably be in football, especially when it's a quarterback position. Yeah. If it's a running back receiver, you wouldn't have this excitement anyways. But when it's the quarterback position, the most important position in all of sports, maybe the fan base can rush it a little bit.
Yeah, and I wonder, like John Fox said, I mean, last night was one preseason game. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
But just based on a very, very small sample size, do the Chicago Bears have a quarterback controversy?
Yeah, I think they – well, here's the deal. Mike Glennon, he's nothing. I mean, no offense to Mike Glennon, he's not. He probably wouldn't be with the Bears next year because Trubisky will be the starter. He'll be named the starter at the end of this year. Mitch Trubisky is just – or Mike Glennon is just a holdover. He always was. He was never the quarterback of the future. He was never the quarterback that was going to lead them to the playoffs or a Super Bowl or anything. So is there a controversy? I mean, I guess the day you drafted Mitch Trubisky, there became, quote, a controversy here in town, but – the Bears know that. You know what I mean? Like, they know what they have in Mike Glennon. They know that he's not going to be the starting quarterback to lead them to the promised land. And they're just fine with that. He was a holdover. He was a guy they signed. And probably in some ways to take a little bit of pressure off Trubisky, I'm guessing. If by controversy you mean, do I think Mitch Trubisky should be the starter? I think he should probably take reps with the second team next week, or at least by the third preseason game. I would say that. I think he deserved that. Now, if he plays the way he played last night, all four preseason games, then they have a decision to make, especially if Glennon doesn't really shine at any
point. And I wonder if we're having this conversation because Mike Glennon was awful last night. Now, as you know, we were on with Carm last night.
Even if Glennon was good, though, we probably still have
That's true. As Carm said last night, I mean, it's a little unfair because Mike Glennon went against a pretty ferocious defense in Denver.
Right.
I mean, that secondary is one of the best in football.
But here's the thing. I know people say, well, it's preseason. It was against a third stringers. Well, he made third stringers look like third stringers and fourth stringers. Like, he stood out and stood out in a big way. It wasn't like he just played well. Like, he was the dominant player on the football field. He did what a legitimate starting quarterback would do to a third string defense. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he made them, the defense, look bad. And that's what a really good quarterback would do. It's not like, I mean, we've seen other quarterbacks play against third string defenses in the preseason and they suck. They're horrible. Trubisky didn't do that. He looked awesome. And I don't care if it was against a third string defense. I mean, of course it would be a much different story if he was against the first string. But let's not take anything away from Trubisky. He was the star of that game. And he looked dominant against those third stringers.
I will say,
you got to give him some credit there.
I caught up. I got home and I put on SportsCenter, and it was a rerun. The start after the show last night, and the first story out of the box from SportsCenter was, what's going on with the Chicago quarterback, which is, you rarely see yeah. as the A story right. in a national broadcast about a sports, the day in sports. Kevin Powell is at Sox Park.
I have one quick question for you, Justin. Did you buy your Mitch Trubisky jersey yet? And which color did you get?
I think I'm going to go with the dumb Halloween ones. Like the striped Halloween
the
ones
orange
that, that don't have the Trubisky's name that just has the number on the back. Yeah, really, really strong stuff. Yeah. Hold on to those to the garage sale. Kevin Powell, WGN Radio Sports. You can hear him with Roe and Anna 3 to 7 every Monday through Friday. Kev, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, Justin. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks, Rob. It is a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, 312-981-7200. We are reloading this week's news, the biggest stories, the winners, the losers, the overreported, the underreported. What story took you down the rabbit hole and which story will be remembered from this week in 5, 10, 15, 20, 500 years from tonight? I say it'll be the phantom construction projects on the Indiana Toll Road, but that's personal. That's personal. I got a whole thing. I want my money back.
You got 90 minutes. Go.
Exactly. Jeff Goins in studio, the investigative reporter with the Chicago Tribune. Good to see you, Jeff.
Hey there.
And Kim Bellware, reporter at large. You've done so many jobs in this town, and I feel like reporter at large does not do it justice. Editor at large? I mean, because the last job you had was with Huffington Post, and that's done. So I guess we'll say with reporter at large.
I'm turning over a lot of rocks.
There you go. Rock turner. Kim, Jeff, welcome to the show. All right, let's get right to it. I mean, we start tonight with the biggest story. You know, Jeff, I'll start with you. I mean, this is one that I think we all agreed, we kind of unanimous. I mean, there may be national, local, international, but North Korea kind of takes the cake.
Yeah, it's difficult to pick anything else in a week like this when something like that just completely drowns out pretty much several news cycles in a row for lots of obvious reasons. I mean, everybody's terrified of North Korea on a regular basis, and then Trump kind of throws gas on the fire, kind of takes the anti-Obama approach where he was sort of a cooling agent constantly related to that. And I think the strategy that you would give somebody like Kim Jong-un power by grabbing onto all the threats and then returning them is kind of not a scenario that we've seen before.
Kind
that,
of vibe,
kicked
yeah.
off a lot of fear this week.
It's a very strange way to approach it. And, you know, I had Charles Lipson on last night, the professor from University of Chicago, political science professor, who got past all the sort of Trump's crazy and Trump improvising with the rhetoric. And he pointed out that this is not improvising. This is a strategy. And this is by far a new direction for the United States, and he says the right one, because it's time to get tough on a rogue state like North Korea. And what do you guys think of that? I mean, it doesn't feel like that plays out when you read it in the New York Times or any of the newspapers, but that seems to be, you know, where we're at. Is Trump out of his league, or is he fixing a problem that other presidents have set up for him?
I think the problem is the flavor. I mean, there are quotes like this in the news this week where Trump tells reporters that that Kim Jong-un will regret it if he, quote, utters one threat in the form of an overt threat, or if he does anything with respect to Guam. This guy wakes up and issues threats to his neighbors. And this is not you don't want two crazy people in this kind of a scenario. Not saying the president's necessarily crazy, but you want some kind of stability.
Right.
And neither one of these guys really projects stability on a regular basis.
Kim, what's your take on this? I mean, as you see, you know, the ratcheting up of the rhetoric, what I find fascinating is that seems to be a callback to a different time where we were talking about nuclear war.
I wake up to the radio. That's my alarm. And twice this week, I've woken up to news reports about a tweet that came out in the morning related to North Korea. And it always, you know, you like that gets you out of bed when you hear those kind of things. I think, you know, what Jeff said about pouring gasoline on this situation is it really is pretty alarming how quickly it accelerated in a week. I think the threat of North Korea has been something that the American people, they get it, they're aware of it, but it's still very much in the abstract. Nobody's really thinking back to, you know, the Cold War era or anything like that with those kinds of, you know, get plans in place. And now people have come around to those thoughts a lot quicker in a week. I think we need a little more time to acclimate to
this.
You
know, it is interesting because Trump, even today, when he was in his latest press availability, talked about this is really a problem that should have been dealt with a long time ago. I mean, he once again talks about, talks about his predecessor and President Obama, and that was the wrong strategy, like you said, to throw a cooling agent on this. But even if you, I mean, go even further, I mean, you look at President Bush, and there were a lot of headbutting with the family at that point. So it feels like this isn't new, but this is a new strategy.
I think part of what happened is we've had several presidents in a row who have said a nuclear-equipped North Korea is not tolerable. We will take steps to prevent that from happening. And I think we had that analysis at the beginning of the week, which said that the state has managed to already miniaturize nuclear weapons and can now deliver them on missiles. It kind of that ratcheted up really fast.
Yeah.
And I think that caught a lot of people by
surprise. Now, the question I have, and it really is a provocation question. We saw this story come out, but it feels like we're forgetting that the week before, the UN put pretty tough sanctions on North Korea. North Korea responded, and they responded with test missiles and started to go out. So there seems to be almost a little bit of revisionist history about what started this latest tit for tat. But it really was sanctions that the Kim family said, no way. You know, they got mad. Then it became, hey, they have nuclear weapons now. Then it became political rhetoric on both sides about we're going to shoot it, or if you threaten us, big. And I forgot what the quote was. That fire and fury.
Fire and fury.
I mean, but you see that there's definitely a linear storyline just this week.
Well, the other thing that I thought was a little confusing is you do have this continual upping and upping and upping from Trump of, you know, we're going to be tough on them. We're not going to give them any quarter. We're not going to back down. We're going to be the ones that deal with this. And people are getting scared. And then at the same time, you know, you have his aide saying, I think everybody can sleep well at night. That's some mixed messaging that I don't know that makes me feel any better.
You hear more and more stories about how the U.S. and the Secretary of State and the others have been working behind the scenes for diplomatic solutions. And it seems to be a good cop, bad cop scenario here where Trump is in the media talking tough, but what they're really doing is behind the scenes trying to get China involved.
And I think that's always occurred, you know, throughout our recent history where there have been steps taken behind the scenes. What's new and as a part of that, North Korea and the leadership there has used the fiery language to kind of show that they're tough and not lose any face in the home country, et cetera. What's new this time is that Trump is kind of doing the same thing. And I don't know if it's because he feels like he's in a weakened state and can also take advantage of a situation where people are moving toward war footing and it's distracting from a lot of other things that he has going on, like the Russia probe and stuff.
Yeah. I've heard that. Yeah.
And it's tricky because they're both variables. You don't have, you know, one slightly more steady or cautious or predictable leader. Now you have two wild cards and two leaders that both seem to respond in similar ways to provocations and slights, real or perceived. And that doesn't seem like it's going to end very well for those of us that don't have the codes.
And I will say this, you know, I have North Korea because I have gone down the rabbit hole. Like, I'm really interested in this story. And, you know, The problem I see it as, and like I said, Professor Lipson was on last night, we were talking about it as well, is that this is really, in a way, a proxy war between China and the United States. China is the ally of North Korea. The U.S. is the ally of South Korea. What never really gets talked about is that North Korea is a very unstable government. That government could be toppled pretty easily. Mm-hmm. And that country, if fallen to the wrong hands, in China's view, the U.S., means that the U.S. have an ally that would be on the border of China. And so there's a little bit, they're trying to protect that space because they understand the political and military, you know, incentive to keeping an ally close like that. Yet they also are very aware that North Korea is provoking trouble for China. It's a very interesting, like, I think there's a lot more to be said. I think Trump, in a weird way, the sort of rhetoric is making everyone look over here, look at the shiny object, but there's much more going on. And I really truly believe that it's a dangerous game he's playing, but at the same time, it's a game that hasn't been played before. And the big issue is, what does China do? If China goes in and says, Kim family, gone, this is too hot for us, you got to go, then it all worked out, right? I mean, that's
when they do always play the long game. You're right about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm fascinated. I don't see Trump as ignorant in this situation. I think that this is calculated. I think this is a strategy. He's approaching it with his known unpredictability and using that as a strength. And so by him going, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll bomb you. They're like, you know, I think that could work to the advantage for the. And so it, North Korea is a big story. Want to know what you think? 312-981-7200. But locally, if we're not going to do international, locally, Kim, you've got school funding.
I think we both had school funding. That, you know, the school year is going to start in a matter of weeks. It's been another one of those
matter
football.
Of days in some parts of Illinois.
That's true. Yes, in a matter of days in some parts of Illinois. CPS is, you know, going to start later this month, and the whole school funding formula in Springfield has been kicked around. And then today there was this bombshell that CPS is now lacking for $269 million for its 2018 budget. And there's some questions on where that money's going to come from. And then we hear something that we hear often from City Hall, you know, from Rahm's office, is that, you know, we're going to support the school, we're going to figure this out, but there's never any indication of where that money's going to come from. There's always money in the banana stand.
Always money in the banana stand. Here's what we'll do. Let's take a break so we stay on time, and we'll catch up on school funding, because that'll come up in winners and losers and all the other categories, because a huge week when it comes to the strategy deployed by both sides of the aisle in Springfield, bringing back the we're going to see this weekend with a possible override of the veto. So a lot going on. Kim Bellware, Jeff Cohen in studio, 312-981-7200. Stay with us. It's Download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Jeff Cohen, Kim Bellware in studio, 312-981-7200. We're reloading this week's news. Rich, what do you say for the biggest story of the week with North Korea?
Oh, well, just now when I was mentioned it, basically South Korea's our ally, North Korea is China's ally. Mm-hmm. I would say North Korea, they're more of a tolerated client state from China, because I don't see China going to war with the U.S. over North Korea for one reason. A, we're their biggest trading partner, and the following fact, this is true. If Walmart was its own country, they alone would be China's fourth largest trading partner.
Yeah.
Basically, you don't kill the goose that laid the golden egg, and right now we're the goose.
Right.
So I don't think China would really be nervous about a united Korea right next door, because they know that our economies, basically our lives, are so intertwined that there's no way either one of us could start a shooting war with each other in the U.S., because there is no winner in that situation.
Yep. Thanks, Rich. Thanks for that. Let's go to Kelly. Kelly, what's your thought on North Korea, Kelly?
My thought is, I think Trump is doing the right thing. I don't think any other president has held them accountable, and they need to be held accountable. They've just gone way too far. And he's never gone this far with any other president to where he's actually launched missiles and threatened like he's been threatening. So I support Trump.
Yeah, I agree with you to an extent. The question I would push back on is, do you think that it's healthy, the rhetoric, to get into the realm of nuclear war? And we start talking about that because, yes, I agree that this is unprecedented territory. But do you support Trump in the way that you know, it's flippantly being thrown around, this idea of you know, fire and fury?
I think Trump's doing what he has to do. I mean, Trump is not really the one making the threats. He's responding, and that's, you know, for every action, there's a reaction.
All right. Thanks, Kelly. All right. There we go. So with North Korea, some thoughts on that. I mean, there's something to be said about it. I mean, Trump ran on the concept of talking tough. He ran on the idea of a different international policy, and this is different.
The problem is you give yourself nowhere to go, I think, and that's the fear with both of these leaders, is that they talk themselves into a position where backing down is a loss, and neither one of them doesn't.
Right.
So every time you escalate it, the territory to work with gets much smaller.
My point with Rich, too, is I'm not that concerned that China would – I don't think China would go to war with the United States. My concern – and again, this is the rabbit hole stuff. You guys will love this – is – North Korea knows that China doesn't have their back, and they consider China to be an adversary in the way that they become a rogue nation and they're up against the wall. Meaning, I didn't recognize this, but the story of the poisoned brother, half-brother or brother that was Kim Jong, I forgot his name, but that was poisoned by the North Koreans, mm-hmm. was in Chinese protection. And they found him in the airport. because the Chinese are thinking, you know what, maybe Kim Jong-un, let's take him out and put his brother in. So that's what, there's already some intrigue and international stuff going with China and North Korea. So that's my only fear is if they feel like they're pushed up against a wall, this specific dictator, this leader, what does he do when he's got no other options? That's the part I don't like about the rhetoric is like, don't get up there. So like you said, Jeff, where there's nowhere to go. And this guy's like, well, I'm going to be taken out anyway. So let's shoot this nuclear missile to Guam and see what happens.
Where's Dennis Rodman in all this?
we need a Rodman,
that
right?
That is a good question. Yeah. He's blown this completely.
All right, 312-981-7200. Let's quickly get into winners and losers. Why don't we start with you, Jeff? Who do you got for your first winner this week?
You know, the Trubisky thing is already out of control. And I was watching the game last night with my lovely wife and mother-in-law, and you could see it coming. I mean, all he did was not fumble, not throw three interceptions. And I'm a baseball person. Don't apologize for it. Grew up playing it. That's when I go see sports. That's where I go. That's what I follow closely. And you forget that what a football town Chicago is, that this one guy who was at North Carolina 10 minutes ago throws six passes in a row, and the place comes unglued, up to and including Mike Ditka today. And I have a quote
that's
from him.
Right.
What did Mike Ditka say?
I can tell you right here. He says, what I saw out of Trubisky for a rookie in his first game I thought was outstanding. I don't know too many rookies, including Tom Brady, Fran Tarkenton, or anybody else that's ever had that kind of a start.
I just
what
snorted.
Are you talking about?
What are you talking about? First of all, it's a preseason game.
Trubisky mania. And the guy's got the perfect, like, Grabowski name. You could just, it's a perfect storm. It's going to get
It close. Is a Bears town. I mean, in the way that it is sports and it is football. But, I mean, it is fascinating to me that a rookie quarterback has one good preseason game. And he was a lead story last night. I came home last night at 12:30. They do the rerun of SportsCenter. A lot of sports is happening. A lot of stuff around the league. And they're like, the first thing that comes up is the Bears see and the other stuff. And he goes, and it was a poetic beginning for the anchor who's like, Chicago has had quarterback trouble. Jay Cutler era has ended, but it's not about Jay Cutler anymore. It's about Trubisky. And they go right into it. And it was like the biggest story in sports.
Huge.
And he's a rookie, and he's not even supposed to play this year.
And what happens the first time he has a bad game? We all know that, too. Everybody's like, hey, we got two airports, man. Pick one. You got to go. They'll turn on him.
Kim, what do you got? What do you have for winners this week?
So I had Taylor Swift, and I talked about how I was a little, you know, I didn't want to bring this one up. I'm not a huge Taylor Swift fan. But this story, you know, the quick recap was she had been she'd accused a Colorado DJ of grabbing her butt during a photo shoot. And they complained to his management instead of going to the police. And this is something that I think you would probably hear from a lot of, sexual harassment, sexual assault victims, that they don't want to be defined by these events. And that's what her mother said was the reason that they didn't go to the police. They went to his employer. He was fired. He's suing her for $3 million. And she countersued him saying, prove it, you know, or, you know, right. prove, you know. So they were in court today. And actually, a couple hours ago, it got thrown out. So she's a winner there. But she's a winner in another way, because these are situations that whenever a woman in particular, I think, is the victim of sexual assault, there's a whole kind of performative victimhood that I think the public expects. You know, you have to be so damaged. You have to be really upset. And it is upsetting. But she did something really interesting with her testimony. She showed how you could be upset, you could be violated, and you could be extremely strong. And you could not be apologetic, you know.
I thought her testimony was outstanding.
It was great. It was great. And, you know, she really was not going to play ball with that attorney of the DJs. You know, he was asking her, how do you feel about the fact that, you know, he lost his job and his career is ruined? She said, I don't feel anything about him. He's in this situation because of his actions, not mine. And I'm glad that she won, because I think there's also, you know, sometimes this unfair burden on, you know, women victims in particular is they have to be likable. And, you know, she's rich and she's powerful and she's pretty. And, you know, I almost let one of those bad words out. But, you know, she did not care. She was not going to soften this for him. And I think that was a really powerful thing to see.
I think, and I would put the Colorado DJ, and he's unnamed, in the loser category. And not just because he had his lawsuit thrown out, but because this seemed, even on the lawsuit side, feels stunty. Mm-hmm. In the way that it's good to get Taylor Swift's name. Maybe I can attach my name to it. It's all from terrible terrible behavior that got him there in the first place, and why he did that. I don't know if he did it for his audience or he did it because it was funny or whatever he was in his mind, allegedly. I mean, there's so much that goes into this, but I put him in the loser category. And it's actually somewhat, I guess, assuring that most of America does. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you haven't seen like a huge argument on Twitter about this. It really has been, yeah, that's that dude, that's gross.
Someone should have counseled him to pick his targets a little better too, because you know, you could have
Taylor Swift.
Yeah. That is maybe the least the least optimal person to take to court. You know, you have all sorts of feelings of public perception, and just, you know, she's going to cut a pretty sympathetic figure.
Well,
I think we're
going to he's going to have a talk show in 2 months somewhere. Jeff Cohen, Kim Bellware in studio. We're reloading this week's news. We're doing winners and losers. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll get tonight's news with Rob Martyr, and then we'll continue here on The Download. Stay with us. Yeah, good track. Beats by Zim tonight. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Kim Bellware, Jeff Cohen in studio tonight. We are reloading this week's news. Kim is a freelance reporter at large, as we said.
Yeah. Rock Turner.
Jeff Cohen, investigative reporter at Chicago Tribune. All right, we're continuing with winners and losers. Let's wrap up on winners, and then we'll get to the losers, because we've got a lot to talk about in that category. But we had Rahm Emanuel in the winners category when it comes to sanctuary cities. That story was this week. Right at the beginning of this week, he sues the Justice Department saying, "Yo, you can't withhold money."
Yeah, it feels like 2 weeks ago, but it was in fact Monday. So this issue is just in a real sweet spot for the mayor. You know, it's anti-Trump administration. It's pro-immigrant. It feels like Chicago underdog thing. He gets to kind of say what he wants and cover a lot of ground with it. But they sued on Monday after the threat to pull some grant funding from the federal government over sanctuary city policies. And Chicago's big issues are the sheriff's office. First of all, the police department doesn't fully cooperate. The sheriff's office doesn't allow ICE agents into the jail like they used to mm-hmm. be able to do. And so it's a relatively small amount of money that was being threatened. That it's about $3 million that the city uses. It's supposed to be just general anti-crime funding. So it's not that much.
It's really about ideology at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but he kind of camped out on it and they sued, and Chicago's kind of becoming the poster child. And
I thought that story, and when I saw that, I was like, okay, I thought a lot about immigration, right? There was a lot about deportations and other. But the big story, and it was Superintendent Eddie Johnson, mm-hmm. who said, listen, we can't hold people more than 48 hours. And what the Justice Department wants to do in this new Trump policy is hold people for more than 48 hours so that ICE agents can get here and be able to check and see credentials and deport people when necessary. And the city of Chicago, it wasn't an ideology at all. It was just saying, listen, the Constitution says 48 hours. If we do any more than that, we're going to be on the hook for civil lawsuits. My officers are going to get sued. The city's going to get sued. We're not putting our officers in harm's way like that.
Well, the other issue is that the main point that the Justice Department always makes is that they demand that information be turned over. Get the person's immigration status. Don't let somebody go you've got questions along that line. And the city repeatedly says, we don't ask. So we can't turn over what we don't collect.
Right.
And that's always worked.
What do you think of this story, Kim? Do you think that this is a win for Mayor Emanuel?
I mean, I think it's a win, because the other thing that they mentioned, I thought, was that the city was not going to incur any legal costs that would wipe out the savings from the grant. So, you know, this is a pretty calculated risk, if you want to call it that, that they're taking. And I think it's going to be, you know, some good image burnishing for Rahm and for the city. And they, like you said, Rahm gets to continue being kind of that needle in Trump's side, you know, Chicago is the face of, you know, the city of resistance kind of thing. but it's, I don't think it's going to come back to hurt the city in any meaningful way.
Like you said, it's not that much money. It's really just about the statement.
Yeah. When Jeff Sessions yells at Chicago on CNN, Rahm wins.
Right.
That's just what it is.
Public art winner, Picasso, 50th anniversary. How about
I
that?
I loved this. I want to hear what Jeff has to say, but I just wanted to quickly say I loved that BEZ was replaying Studs Terkel's interviews with what people thought of it. And everybody thought it was so ugly.
we had the one of the designers from Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill on, and he brought the letters, like actual letters that when anyone wrote a letter that they did not like the Picasso in 1967. Mayor Daley at the time, he had it forwarded to the design company. Like, he's like, this is not a city issue, the design company. So they have in the archive all these letters of, dear Mayor Daley, this is crap. Or, dear Mayor Daley, good job on you. So it's just really interesting to see that that's collected.
I put it on there just because I feel like the artwork kind of as a being has kind of settled into its surroundings. And now it's been overshadowed by, you know, CloudGate and Millennium Park and so many other things that it's kind of, I think it became a beloved symbol probably long ago, but I was reminded of it this week.
I agree.
Reminded of the Royco column the day that was hilarious. It has, you know, the cold, pitiless eyes of a slum lord and all that. That was worth the recycle as well.
Well, it was funny because they also asked back in the day what people thought, you know, the figure was. And I think at this point, the city has decided that it is the face of some, you know, sentient creature because they put a Blackhawks helmet on it and they dress it for, you know, whenever one of our teams goes to the playoffs.
There's a lot of interesting things about that. I mean, in the convo, they talked about the rust coloring and how that was on purpose. And no one really explained that to Chicago. So everyone thought it was just a bad paint job, but it was a new kind of material that on purpose rust. There's a lot that goes into that.
Well, they talked it up so much, too, is what just made it funny. You think about Chicago in the 60s and the inferiority complex that was probably here.
Yeah.
And they unveiled it as this giant piece of global, you know, importance that was going to really elevate Chicago. And they pulled the curtain off of this thing. People kind of stare at it and walk away.
We love it. So, all right, let's talk losers. Always good to talk losers. And I think we start with the state of Illinois. We had promised to talk about this issue, of course. School funding. Governor Rauner this week ends up on your list, Jeff, as in the loser category. He had a tough week, not only for trying to explain why he vetoed school funding, but then on top of it, explaining what was in his amendatory veto, which and all the things he put forward for his plan. And then even today, getting essentially bad reviews from his own people. I mean, Ann Coulter and some have said that he had his national interview on Fox. And she went to Twitter and eviscerated him.
That's why I put him on there. I think that his the base of his political support is starting to wear down on this issue, and he's kind of endured several losses in a row now, and here comes another one. And even in my paper today, you know, a couple of an editorial writer who's always in his corner even took him to task, saying he botched this, and that's just new. And I think he's finally starting to be dented by it.
I'm always interested in, you know, kind of what Rauner signals for the larger conversation. And I always wondered why more people didn't look at what was happening in Illinois. I mean, the path that he's on really seems similar in some ways to the path that Trump is on. You know, they had these similar histories and, you know, not a lot of legislative successes. And they're getting, you know, throttled by some people who are, you know, would otherwise on a different day maybe be their supporters. So, yeah, it's...
Well, I wonder, and I will say that, you know, if you're going to put Rauner in a loser category, you probably could put Madigan in a loser category too, because, you know, this is once again state government at its worst, where deadlines have been passed. School funding was supposed to be given to schools yesterday yesterday. Some schools are opening Monday. We still don't know how much money they're going to get. I mean, we have played these games with the budget for so long that somehow this has become the norm. And here we are again, where they're going in on Sunday. They're going to override the amendatory veto in the Senate, which essentially kills it. So now we got to go to a new bill, which will take its time, and no one will do anything. And it becomes like a playbook. Then the legislative leaders will go behind closed doors, and one didn't show up, and that was a slight to somebody else. And here we go again down this rabbit hole of years of trying to figure it out while everybody's on the hook thinking tomorrow they might have to close.
And
it's ridiculous.
I talked about this with you the last time I was on this exact show, how we've devolved into this trench warfare, and everything is like this now. The whole idea of statesmanship and compromise, that went out the window a long time ago. Now we live with kind of, it's the nuclear option every day.
And it's not just, and trust me, I'm on this show and I in the carryout and all this time talk about Rauner. But the Democrats have to own this as well, in the way that this chunk of money that has really been at the core, about $260 million, like you mentioned, became right in that area, has been a pension pickup that CPS has wanted. And the Democrats in Springfield have tried several different ways to package that money. And each time Governor Rauner stands in the way. He has made it clear he does not want to give this. And just even with the school funding formula, What's at what's at the core of the argument is, once again, the Democrats going, oh, before you put that in, slide this in there. And they've been doing that kind of legislative maneuvers and tricks for years. And they do that all the time. And I can understand why voters are like, enough. Like, this is school funding formula. You're sneaking some pension pickups is not a part of that. You want to act like it is, but it's not. And that's where I think Governor Rauner has at least been consistent. I think that at some point he has to compromise, like you said, but he has been. Remember, it was supposed to be, if you reform pensions, I'll give you this money. That was, what, 8 months ago at the beginning of January? That was the same money. And Democrats have found ways to try and sneak that money in different ways and try to make it political, as opposed to come to the table with Governor Rauner, who also gets bad raps for not compromising. I mean, it's like you said, trench warfare. I'm done. Rant over.
It's making some interesting reactions on the side of the Democratic candidates for governor shaping up.
I know, right?
J.B. Pritzker winning the Democratic Party's nomination today, and you know, some lieutenant governor running mates being announced, and it's August, a year before August. The election.
And let's do this. Let's take a break, and I want to talk about that, because I think that and we've talked about it on this program before, but I think the Democrats run the risk once again to repeat what happened in 2016 election, where everyone anointed Hillary Clinton to be the nominee before she was the nominee, and a progressive movement came up and swelled up, and the Democratic Party did everything they possibly can to put it down, even to the point of losing the election. And I feel in Illinois, we didn't learn the mistake of that has not been learned in the way that here it is. Mike Madigan here is once again going, it's going to be Pritzker. And there are four or five other candidates. So let it play out. But instead, they're going right to the anointed role, doing it once again. Kim Bellware, Jeff Cohen in studio tonight. We're reloading the news. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. 630, Art says, really, most people don't even care about that statue anymore. Oh, ouch, Art. I don't think that's true. I think whenever I go on Washington Street and I see that statue, I'm like, Chicago, Blues Brothers, got it. Boom, next.
Blues Brothers, forgot about that.
630 says, sounds like political grandstanding just so the mayor can say, I'm helping the Mexican-American community in terms of sanctuary cities, essentially placating votes.
That's not unfair.
Yeah,
no,
right.
No, it was very
one. No. And 773 says, talk about R. Kelly. We're not going to talk about R. Kelly, but R. Kelly in the news looked like there was going to be a criminal investigation into R. Kelly, but then the Atlanta police said it's closed. So
yeah, Fulton we'll County DA said that there was no investigation going on.
So we'll do 6 hours on R. Kelly next week. all right, 779's got us lined up for our last loser this week, the second biggest loser, the taxpayers of Cook County. Larry says this, and this plays to your loser, Jeff, Tony Preckwinkle. Tough week for Cook County Board President.
People are driving to Indiana to buy Mountain Dew.
Jeff's got a Diet Coke over there.
It's a bad deal. Yeah, it's just, I think, politically for her, too. It wasn't too long ago where she was seen as having the same kind of political muscle as the mayor, practically, and there was kind of a two-tiered system here with the two of them. And when he would run for re-election, people would cast a slight eye toward Tony. Even will she get in? And she was seen as the one person who could maybe, you know, sincerely knock him off. And now she's kind of degraded to the point where she has a possible challenger even, and she's this has become the issue for her, and it's about. We've got, you know, state income taxes going up. You've got city property taxes going up. This is the T. You know,
this is
one that's practical. People go to the grocery store. They look at their receipt. They're tweeting their receipts. This is one that they can actually kind of see it happening in real time in their man.
And the stores have been in on this before when the ordinance was still being tight, when it was still tied up in court. I went to my neighborhood Mariano's and there were little tags saying, you know, this is this beverage, it would be eligible for the soda tax. And then there was a little placard that said, you know, vote no. There was something that, you know, had been handed
when your
out.
Grocery store gets political, right? But I mean, there is something to be said about that. And there's a lot about preparation because a lot of the stores don't know how to tax. Walgreens is being, there's class action lawsuits about, LaCroix. And we talked about that last week. But I mean, there's a lot of confusion that can't help. The polls come out. It's almost unanimous in this way that nobody wants. I mean, you can't call somebody on a poll and be like, well, are you in favor of a soda tax? I mean, you're going to get 100% on that. But I mean, you're right. When it comes to like the moment that this tips over, the soda tax is the closest we've seen since Todd Stroger did the sales tax, eight years ago.
Yeah.
That was the one that said that ended his political career. I mean, there are other things in there as well, but Cook County Board President, Tony Preckwin, I want to see how she responds to this because she's been out in front of this. She continues to argue. She even like went to Twitter and yelled at Walgreens, you know, like, I mean, she's in front. She's saying, I'm going to go after this. And it'd be interesting to see how she develops what her position is as this soda tax continues to make people angry.
Well, I mean, she doubled down on it yesterday. It's in today's paper where she was asked point blank if she'd repeal it. And she turned to kind of put a human face on it and say, you remember we were debating this. It was basically this or cutting 1,000 people out of the payroll.
Yeah.
But they already cut them. They already got their layoff notices.
Well, they're supposed to come back.
They're
supposed to get those people back at some point.
Right.
But I Charlie Meyerson was on the show last week and he brought up the potential. This isn't appeals. And it gets to a certain point where, I mean, some argue that Cook County Board President used those layoffs to be able to influence the judge to say, oh, this is important, let's have this because people are losing their jobs. Is public fervor enough to influence a judge later down the line to say, you know what, no soda tax? And if so, then everyone's going to owe their money back.
Judges drink
sodas
too.
What happens at that point when it gets rescinded and then everyone is
just
going to
bring your receipts?
Just bring your hold on to your receipts. Hold on to your receipts. Jeff Cohen, Kim Bellware in studio. We'll come back. Here's what we're going to do. We'll do the overreported and underreported. What stories took us down the rabbit hole and which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from this week? It's a download, reload in this week's news. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Kim Bellware in studio. Jeff Cohen as well. 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. We are reloading this week's news. We are on to overreported and underreported. Yay. Jeff, you've got a controversial overreported, but I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, this won't be popular. It's going to make me sound like a grumpy older person. But,
yelling at a cloud or the moon in this case.
The eclipse for me. I feel like it's happened 4 times. It's still 10 days away. You can't turn on anything without seeing the eclipse.
Yeah. I'm with you. I thought it already happened.
Right. And people are trying to get married during it. Okay. At the peak, it's like 3 minutes long, first of all. I know it's going to be kind of dark for an hour and a half or whatever, but it's really fast. And you have to remember that back in time, it was a sign that, you know, God was angry. This would happen and the Mayans would sacrifice 100 extra people. You know,
right.
This is not the kind of thing you should be trying to like get married during. The whole thing is just kind of, it's starting to kind of wear me down.
My pushback on that was, I remember an eclipse when I was in elementary school, and it's true that these do happen all the time and they happen all over the world, but it's like 0.2% of the world's population, you know, is in the line of totality. So they happen often, but a very, very small population of the world, if they even bothered, could see them. And like you said, they happen so fast, they're just gone. So we're in this unique moment in the United States
where we are,
and we're within 200 miles of the line of totality. So the thing that I think is a good servicey journalism—that's what it's
that's
called.
What I'm talking about. That's what Jeff and I, that's what I'm like. All right, I've heard that so many times.
Case closed.
But what I think is fascinating, though, is you know, apparently some of these small towns. So in Illinois, the line is going through Cairo, Murfreesboro, Carbondale. St. Louis, Nashville, and Kansas City are some of the biggest Midwestern. I mean, after that,
will
like,
I be able to see it in Chicago or no?
You will be able to see it. You won't get the same effect with like the temperature cooling
always
the shadow.
Somewhere, always cooler somewhere else.
But some of these small towns have apparently been planning for 3 years to handle the huge influx. And if you look on, I looked on Airbnb 2 weeks ago, and there is someone in, I think, Shawnee National Park downstate who has an RV that sleeps 5, and they're selling each bed in the RV for $100 a night. I mean, people in the middle of nowhere.
That's a good story.
God love you, but they are charging $700 on Airbnb. Get that money, though.
I'd be down if someone invited me to Nashville to see it. Then you can hang out in Nashville, then you can party a little bit. You know, I feel like there's a thing there.
But if you're in a small town with one gas station and like a little mini mart and everybody's making a run on the food or campgrounds with the toilets and they're at, you know, three times the capacity.
And it's a 3-minute thing and it's over and you're like, well, why am I here?
It seems like we do have them all. I can remember doing the thing where you cut the
little
pinhole.
This
and you look at
this is a very specific one. This is a specific line of totality.
It's 10 days
I don't think anyone is disputing the importance or the value and the quality of this opportunity. It's just, I agree with Jeff that it's gone to the point where that's all anyone's thinking. You go on Twitter and it's just like, everyone's talking about, can you believe it's 20 days away? And you're like, okay, everyone calm down. It'll be here soon enough.
Maps and graphs.
It's pretty clear.
A lot of maps.
Pretty clear who in the studio lacks a sense of childlike wonder.
That's true.
I think you nailed it. All right, let's talk about, I had for overreported, and it was only a day, but the poll that came out that polled Republican voters, and it had asked if Republicans, if President Trump had found massive voter fraud, if you would be okay with the president postponing the 2020 election. New York Times had it. It was a poll in which 52% of those polled said yes. And the headlines then became most Republicans want Trump to postpone the election in 2020. And it was on purpose, like inciting and you know, fanning flames. It's clicky. And it was just everywhere on Tuesday or Wednesday. And I hated that story. And I remember making a mental note. I'm like, overreported. It's never going to happen. So that was a thing. So underreported. Let's go to underreported. Kim, what do you got for underreported?
So yesterday, Chicago Magazine had a story by Lee Gaines about, it was called What Happened to Illinois' Medical Cannabis Advisory Board. Mm. And, you know, for those who haven't been keeping track, the Illinois medical marijuana law is one of the is the strictest in the country, and it's on a sunset. And per this report, the advisory board was quietly disbanded in a deal with Rauner to keep the law going, because, you know, I think he was not as absolutely in favor of it as some of his Democratic opponents. And
well, this was a big project that his predecessor, Governor Quinn, put in. And then I remember Rauner in the first 6 months or whatever looked at that advisory board and he looked at who was getting Illinois medical marijuana licenses. And he said, this is all he kind of pointed out that this was what do you call it, like political.
Yeah. Yeah. And the, you know, it was Representative Lou Lang, who's sort of the architect of this bill, who made the agreement to disband the board in order to get the extension. But what it really doesn't address is the fact that this law is still incredibly restrictive and not very useful. And there's a lot of people I know personally who legitimately have issues like multiple sclerosis and pain issues that could be alleviated by this. And it's really a disservice. I mean, we still have people in Illinois who are going to Colorado where, you know, legal and recreational marijuana is widely available. You know, marijuana refugees. Illinois is a state where we have, you know, we are creating marijuana refugees with our restrictive
it's
law.
It's an interesting, I mean, you're right. It is one of the more restrictive, if not the most restrictive, which is strange for the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago being a more progressive, you would think to be a more progressive state. But it is, it's an interesting way that I've never seen it, and I don't pay too close attention to state all state legislators, but I've never seen it where there's been such the restrictive part is in what the qualifications are.
What the conditions are.
Yeah, the conditions are. Like they're haggling over that.
Yeah, and it's and what's interesting too is even in states that, you know, we think of as pretty historically conservative, you know, like Kentucky, they have been a lot looser than Illinois has, because it doesn't really take any particular political ideology if there is a child that suffers intractable seizures to think they need, you know, they need access to us, or someone who, you know, has chronic pain, PTSD, things like that, multiple sclerosis. And it's kind of a head scratcher why Illinois is really trailing the rest of the country, because in the time since the law was passed in Illinois, the rest of the country has really just
There's a number of states that will probably have ballot measures, but it'll be interesting to see how that issue plays out with a Justice Department that is less friendly to that issue coming up in the future. Let's go to Jeff. What do you got for underreported?
I think you and I both had the Manafort situation. any other week, that would have been a huge deal, but with the North Korea situation kind of drowning everything else out, which was the news that the FBI had raided Manafort's home last month. and that since subpoenas have gone out related to his bank dealings, just it's starting to take the flavor of a more major criminal investigation that you might see. I mean, to knock on somebody's door at dawn and go through
stuff. Yeah, a pre-dawn raid. Always, always my favorite kind of raid.
Right, that's not a good sign. And it also answers some questions. I mean, does it suggest that, you know, people wondered, could Manafort flip on the president? Is that the way this goes? Well, apparently not. You know, there's, it's just, it's for something so big, it just didn't get
you
that
know,
much pressure.
I have to say that the intense scrutiny of Paul Manafort at his time as chief of staff in the Trump campaign, at the time when he was chosen to be chief of staff, and he didn't last very long, there were a lot of skeptics that said, this guy is not the kind of guy that you would think the Donald Trump would want at this stage in nature because of his connections, because he's got a lot of dirt. I remember Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy on the show, and Chris Roebling, the Republican, saying, Paul Manafort's got a lot of dirt on him.
Yeah, he came in the door radioactive, yeah, and everybody figured it out pretty fast.
Yeah, so is it possible, and I throw this out not just to you guys to answer, but I think to the, in the ether, that, yeah, there was some, I don't know if the word small c collusion on the part of Paul Manafort, because that's what Paul Manafort does. And the president didn't know about it and didn't have anything to do with it, but it does sort of draw back, you know, you can, everything that we've seen up to this point, you know, circles around. Paul Manafort was in that meeting with the adoption, quote unquote, adoption lawyer. You know, Paul Manafort had a lot of business connections in Russia. So, I mean, I wonder if that might be where they're circling in when it comes to an investigation.
Well, right. And that's going to be sort of the seed of something larger. And when you hold it up against Mueller really beefing up his team with actual real criminal prosecutors, it starts to look worse and worse.
Yeah.
And there was the grand jury news from last week. And I mean, how long do you guys think it'll be before there's any real resolution or any clarity?
Well, I think it'll take a while, but I wonder if this is a strong indication that they will be looking to go after certain people as opposed to what the media has created. And I don't mean this in any bad way, but the idea that this was all a big conspiracy to the president.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think what you're going to see is more scrutiny on some of the mid-level type people, Paul Manafort being a good example, where it could end there, meaning that he was, that's what he does, he had connections, that's how he runs campaigns.
Right, and that's why it then moves to the cover-up, which is why they say the cover-up always gets you.
That's always gets you, man. Jeff Cohen, Kim Bellware in studio right now. All right, so we'll come back, we'll do the rabbit hole stories, and we'll pick which story will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 500 years from this week. Stay with us. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, 312-981-7200. We're about to go. We're going to talk about which stories took us down the rabbit hole this week. 773 says, on the scale of James Bond movies, how big is the eclipse, Goldfinger or Skyfall? You guys have a want
to? I was going to sing the theme, but I didn't want to do that to the listeners.
I'm a no comment. I'm ignoring the eclipse for 10 days.
312 says, Kentucky supports marijuana and has for years because it's the only crop that can replace tobacco. Well, that's Andy. I don't know. I don't know much about tobacco or Kentucky at all in those kind of situated. I don't know too much about Kentucky's, what they produce. I don't know.
I think I cut off my mic.
I gotcha.
Okay.
You're all good.
All right.
You're all set. Don't worry about it. All right. 312-981-7200. All right, Jeff, why don't we start with you? What story took you down the rabbit hole this week? What were you reading?
It was not a traditional rabbit hole where you kind of bounce from thing to thing, but it's a very long story that I kind of gave a lot of thought to. It's the current Atlantic cover story. It's a Kurt Anderson piece entitled How America Lost Its Mind.
Mm.
And it's kind of a good summary piece, I think, for some of the stuff we've been talking about. And it's sort of the subhead is, the nation's current post-truth moment is the ultimate expression of mindsets that have made America exceptional throughout its history. And it sort of, it walks through America's recent past and says that this current state that we're in, where everybody kind of gets to claim their own facts and their own political reality, comes out of first the 60s, where everybody kind of, relativism took over and everybody kind of had their own, you know, camped out on their own ends of the political spectrum. And that grew into the consumerism of the 80s, and that grew into the internet, and now you have all these groups where in the past they would have been fringe groups, finding it impossible to get their message out and kind of pushed to the sidelines of society. They've kind of glommed together on the internet, and they draw strength from each other, and then political systems have to start paying attention to them, and then somebody like Trump is a master of recognizing that and capitalizing on it, and before you know it, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you can make the argument that it was even before Trump. I mean, what we saw with the sort of Tea Party movement was one that was also born of the internet and was born of people not I guess, I don't want to say just digital leaders, because there's terrestrial radio and other people that kind of led that charge. But there are people that were tastemakers that sort of said, listen to us. And then everyone started paying attention.
I did have one I'm actually thinking of. So I was looking a lot into what's going on in Venezuela this week, because that's one of those stories that has kind of been on a lot of people's back burners for a long time. You know, things are getting, you know, more and more critical there. I think it was today. I'm losing all sense of time with some of these things. I think today, or it was yesterday, yesterday or today, you know, Trump was saying that, you know,
military options.
Yeah,
on the
military
table,
options on the table. Today, yeah. But, you know, this is one of those stories that I think you mark it in your saved pile, and you're going to get around to it. You're going to get to that long read that dissects everything, and it gets away from you. And, you know, in the meantime, you know, real things are happening to people in that country, and the story's getting bigger and bigger, and it's getting more complex. So I was really trying to grab a hold of it.
What's the elevator like summary on that?
Oh.
I mean, because to be honest with you, that is a story. I'm with you. That I would put in underreported. It'll show up in international papers and everything, but it's one that I'm like, next. Like, I don't have time to think about what's happening, political unrest in Venezuela. And I should, but I don't know anything about it.
Well, it's interesting, too. I think the response that we see a crisis of, you know, starvation, for example, I think we look at it differently in the Americas versus if this were happening, you know, in the Middle East or in Africa. But, you know, the very high level is, you know, Venezuela was one of the wealthiest countries, you know, booming economy because of oil. And then that market crashed. Then there was, you know, a lot of dissatisfaction, which I'm still trying to make sure I get a whole handle on it, of what's going on with, you know, their president Maduro, and there's things going on at the Supreme Court, and if these elections were legitimate, you know, meanwhile you had yeah. last summer people, you know, lining up for hours trying to go to, you know, countries across the border to get basic supplies, and now, you know, it's even more dire. You have middle class families.
So does it come down to essentially a civil war or a coup that's going? Why would the president say military options are on the table to get involved? That's where I think I lose track of what's happening.
Everybody's ears perked up today when he said.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah,
I mean, that's...
I didn't know it was that kind of situation. Maybe, like I said, I'm ignorant to it. I haven't paid much attention to it, but I think I would have if I thought that this was something the U.S. had vested military interest in.
I mean, this is the story that I will admit to picking up and putting down endlessly all week.
Me too.
And I really need to dig into it. So, because I don't know the answers, and I really do want to, especially if the president's talking about, you know, it's on the table. And just because it's a, you know, I think it's an important story. It's a legitimate humanitarian situation that's going on.
My rabbit hole story was one that I had in a couple different categories, but it had to do with what's happening just north of us in Wisconsin. Foxconn, the huge manufacturing plant, was big press conference with Donald Trump, was up there talking about how this is great. We're keeping it in the U.S. It's going to be in Wisconsin. It's going to be, you know, in Kenosha area. And then it started to trickle out last week that maybe it wasn't the greatest deal. They were getting incentives out the wazoo there was a stat that said for every man, woman, and child in Wisconsin, they could buy an iPhone for as much as they're giving up in taxes. But the big thing this week, which I found I had no idea there was this kind of political strife in Wisconsin, but that the state assembly there, which is Republican run, they're in cahoots with Governor Walker, does not like this the deal.
There was something I read that the factory, they might not even break ground on the factory for more than a decade.
I wouldn't be surprised. And then the number that is holding up Republican assembly, whether it be in their Senate or in their assembly, is that they're not going to see any sort of return in investment until 2043.
Maybe that's what it was.
That's just the idea that there's so, I mean, that's how much incentives are being, you know, given to this company to come here. And, you know, beyond all the other questions about whether or not they, their relationships with labor and abuses and things that are on this company's record, it's just startling to me that the argument about whether or not that is coming to Wisconsin, it really comes down to a deal in the assembly, and it's a Republican-led assembly that is saying, hold your horses. And I didn't think that was going to be possible, especially after the Republican president and Republican governor are shaking hands saying this is a done deal.
I kind of like the old-fashioned Illinois-Wisconsin rivalry part of it, too. I read something today which they pointed out that it's close enough to the border where most of the workers will be from Illinois,
right?
And so Wisconsin's going to pay for it, and you jerks. You know?
Well, that was the editorial in the Tribune saying, why didn't Illinois play for this? And then the response to that is, Illinois did. They let Wisconsin, yeah. And they'll be able to go over the border. All right, we reload this week's news. We got through all the categories this week with Jeff Cohen. He's an investigative reporter over at the Chicago Tribune. Kim Bellware, reporter at large. Let's get to our final category, my favorite. Which story will be remembered from this week in 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, 100, 500 years from this week? What do you think it's going to be? Why don't we start with you, Kim?
North Korea. We're going to remember this as the juncture at which all the young people started dusting off their parents and grandparents' fallout shelter manuals. And, you know, I'm looking at this nice handy sheet that Jeff printed out from the city of Chicago about what to do in the event of a nuclear threat. So,
Jeff, what do you got for that?
I think for 500 years, we got to go Trubisky. It's going to be right there. North Korea, that's the one. I mean, no matter which way it goes, it's the first major, foreign policy test for Trump and the first real, potential cataclysm.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
I will say, are you ready for this one? You guys ready? I will say this one probably is a more 50 year than a 500, but I will say that early in this week, they had talked about the Army Corps of Engineers and others getting together to create more resources and funding to stop the Asian carp from getting into the Lake Michigan. This was right at the beginning of the week, and they talked about, I think it was in Joliet, I can't remember where it was, that there's a bottleneck, that they want to put a fence up there, and they need to get the funding to do so because that's the last line of defense, and they feel like that's the best chance. I think my prediction is that this will be the week that we look back and say we should have done that.
Well, that's the only fish here.
Yeah, it's the only fish we have, and Asian carp is all we have, and it has destroyed Lake Michigan. Lake Michigan is just a brown Asian carp, just one big fish. We'll go, man. Maybe we should have done that.
Whatever happened to the test that was put out to all the best chefs in Chicago to cook with it?
I think they went, nah, no thanks.
That's pretty gross.
You know what? We'll work with a fence. Jeff Cohen, Kim Bellware, reloading this week's news. You guys, thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks, Rob. Man, always good to reload the news, right? That's so great. Such good, thoughtful people that come in studio and people that call in and text. I mean, it's a interesting way to kind of wrap up what's happened in the news. And I like it, too, because it definitely, in this day and age, there's so many stories that come and go without even a thought because of the big overarching stories that are coming out of Washington. And so you really don't get a chance to talk about some of those smaller stories at all and how they affect us here locally or in the Midwest or even in the country because those big stories just dominate. So, hey, we're keeping it alive, keeping hope alive. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, we're going to play Never Have I Ever, where we essentially, you tell me what you've never done and I'll give you a prize. How about that? We got prizes tonight? I'm sure we do. Yeah, pizza. That's all really your confessions are worth. So pizza. But there are people right now going, oh, man, I want that pizza. Already there's been some never have I evers that have come up. You know what? I've got a good one tonight. Never have I ever seen Bachelor in Paradise. Tracy, does that bum you out that I've never seen that show?
I'd like to think that it's going to change starting next week.
Joining me on the line, Tracy Swart. She's the ink columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And she, of course, is our guest every Friday night as we do our show. Hashtag, I like just to say hashtag in front of stuff. There's really no hashtag for it, but hashtag reality check. Tracy, good to see you. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. So this is the week. Next week is the beginning of Bachelor in Paradise. And we've been talking about this show, and I feel like I kind of know what's going to happen, even though I've never seen it.
So basically, it is all the rejects from previous seasons of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette going to Mexico to hook up and fall in love, asterisk, again.
Is this a well-rated show? I mean, is this a highly rated show, Bachelor in Paradise? Does it get the same kind of buzz that a Bachelorette gets, that a Bachelor gets, that kind of thing?
It does, because it's a slot fest. I mean, it's very sloppy. You got to kind of keep track of who's who. They're constantly bringing new people in when the other people fail to find love in the jacuzzi. So it keeps it fresh just with turnover alone.
I believe The Bachelorette is over, right?
Yes.
Because I saw a little bit on Facebook. I was joking with people when they were saying, I can't believe Richie didn't, Johnny. And I was like, don't spoil Game of Thrones. Nobody liked that comment. I was like, why am I commenting on Facebook posts about The Bachelor? So The Bachelorette is over. Who won?
Okay, so she ended up picking Brian. It was 3 hours long, so you saved yourself 3 hours and many think pieces later. She picks Brian, but she seemed to have more chemistry with Peter. As you recall, he used to live in Chicago. He was 2012, one of Time Out Chicago's hottest trainers.
Yes!
In 2012.
He made it to the final two?
Yeah, he made it to the final two, and basically he was not ready to propose. Oh. You would think after watching this woman date other men for many weeks that he would be willing to get down on one knee, but he wasn't, so she chose Brian instead.
I have so many questions just from that statement. So the show ends, and I'm sorry to all of Download Nation who's like, I like listening to Justin because he knows a lot of topics. This is one topic I know nothing of, and I try to keep up with Tracy. So essentially that factors into whether or not the Bachelorette will pick you, whether or not you're ready to get married or commit to a long-term relationship?
The intent of the show is to get engaged at the end of the show. Rachel is 31, or she was 31 when she filmed this, and she made it very clear to her contestants that she wanted a ring at the end of this. And Peter, while they had great chemistry, was not ready to give her that ring, and that seemed to make her decision pretty easy to go for Brian.
What does that mean? I mean, the show is about, at the end, you have to engage, so doesn't Peter know that? Is he essentially saying he doesn't want to play the game anymore?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, he seemed to really enjoy being with her. But, this is a very awkward situation. You have watched the woman that you love or have strong feelings for date so many other men, and there's so much pressure on you to propose at the end. I think he wanted to have a relationship with her post-show, but he just wasn't really ready to take that step to say, let's get engaged, which kind of, to me, just because you get engaged on the show, it doesn't mean that you'll get married,
Right, someone needs to tell them it's reality TV.
A lot of times you don't get married, so you could just go through the motions of getting engaged. And several of the past Bachelor and Bachelorettes are still in the relationships from a couple of years ago with the people they chose, but they haven't even tied the knot yet. It doesn't mean that you have to get engaged or get married tomorrow, but they do expect you to sit down with Neil Lane, design a ring, and go through the whole hoopla of it.
But I guess my question is, I'm trying to pull back the curtain on a show like The Bachelorette. Doesn't Peter know that? I mean, doesn't he? He's a contestant, don't they? When they're not shooting, they're like, all right, did everyone read their waiver? You could get down on one knee and do the engaged thing, and it's a great ending. You get on the cover of Us Weekly, but you don't have to get married for another year or two.
Unless the good thing is you're runner-up, which means you could possibly be in line to be the next Bachelor.
Oh, so this guy is a career move.
It could be. I mean, you never know what somebody's motivations are.
Wow.
So it could be him saying, maybe this isn't the girl for me, but I am looking good on the show. I'm going to be the next Bachelor.
God, Tracy, I have so many questions that continue to pop up. I mean, is that, how do the producers of a show like The Bachelor or Bachelorette, how do they handle the fact that their format, their formula, their playbook is exposed because they've done so many seasons that the contestants will manipulate the game for their own selfish interest?
That's what reality TV is all about. You know, they know you're there to be selfish. People go on the show and wear like their company's logos on shirts and hats and stuff. They know that you're trying to game them. A lot of people are not on reality TV to find love. They're out there to promote themselves, promote their products to get on another reality show. So, and it makes for good TV. There was a lot of chatter about this finale because he did not want to get engaged. So they got what they wanted, which is, you know, a water cooler finale.
Yeah, wow. And he gets a little bit of stock, and we were talking about him, and if they follow the formula, he would be the next Bachelor. Have there been instances where they don't follow the formula, where they say, all right, we don't really like Peter as the next Bachelor, let's just pick someone new?
Yes, they actually, last season, they picked Nick Vile, who was the runner-up for two seasons. Two seasons he was the runner-up, and he was not picked as the Bachelor the following season. And then they gave it some time. He got a redemption storyline on Bachelor in Paradise last year, and then they picked him to be the Bachelor. There's some talk now that Ben Higgins, who was the season 20 Bachelor, could come back to be the next Bachelor because his relationship, the woman he picked on the show, they broke up.
What?
So some people, there has been in the past where someone has been the Bachelor twice.
Oh, that's crazy. Now I'm intrigued. I'm going to go back to my TiVo, see if I have any of these saved.
Three hours.
Tracy Swartz joins us every Friday night to talk about reality television and really its effect on Chicago and Chicago storylines. You know, we were following Peter because he was once in Chicago, sort of a Chicagoan. The Chicagoans that were on the show, you wrote a great story right at the beginning of the season, Bachelorette, about all the Chicago people, and they were bounced in the first 2 weeks. They turned out to all be duds. Although Pete met them. Did you know that Pete Zimmerman, our Pete, was at Pitchfork, and he met Dizzy and Rizzy, or the two guys.
Iggy and Diggy. And you will see them again next week when Bachelor in Paradise premieres.
Did they get any spoilers?
No. Tight-lipped. Tight-lipped.
Did you really ask?
No. Did Pete recognize them first, or did Pete's wife recognize them first?
Well, good question.
I know my wife recognized him.
I'm sure, Pete. Come on.
Did you? But when they were pointed out, you're like, oh, wow.
Well, at first I thought, like, she's like, oh, my God. And she went up to them and she didn't say who they were. I'm like, that doesn't look like somebody that my wife would hang out with. Why is she talking to these people? And then she asked me to take a picture. And I'm like, oh, I know.
She's like,
I get it.
Iggy and Biggie. Oh, hey, what's up? You should have said, well, I talk about you guys every Friday night. Tracy, before I let you go, we always do talk about Chicago storylines. Last week we talked about wrapping up Marriage at First Sight, which had Chicago storylines. What else? Is there anything else in the Chicago realm that is happening in reality television this week?
So Bachelor in Paradise starts next week, Iggy and Diggy, watch out for them. And then in two weeks from tonight, there is a new reality show that premieres on WeTV. I'm sure that is the number one, you know, channel on your TiVo, Justin.
Yeah, my TiVo.
It is called Love Blows, and it's based on a Chicago matchmaker. It's like six episodes long, and it's executive produced by the woman who does the Millionaire Matchmaker series, Patty Stanger. And it is another show that examines how desperate Chicago singles are.
Yeah, you have a bone to pick with that. They're setting it. They're developing a reputation for this town and our singles. The last thing I say is, last week we talked to you on Friday here at Lollapalooza, you know, so how did the weekend go? More importantly, and I guess the only question I'm really interested in is how many people got arrested and how many people were sick after that festival?
So there was 27 arrests, which was more than double the number of arrests from last year. And I don't know why people do this, but most of the arrests are for fence jumping. I know that there are a couple people every year who get through this way, but more often than not, you don't get through, and they will see you, and they will arrest you or cite you. So that's been was a big problem. And then this year, there were 234 people sent to local hospitals, which was down from last year, which was surprising because this year they introduced a roller rink. Mm-hmm. And that looked like it was going to be a disaster for some people.
You know, it's so funny. After I talked to you on Friday, I went Saturday, and the entrance that we got in on led us right to that Perry stage you were talking about, the EDM stage.
Right.
And I was told by everybody, because I was bringing my 10-year-old, like, just whatever you do, just stay away from that stage, you'll be fine. So it was funny that it launched us right into that stage, and that's right next to the roller rink. And oh my, you were right. That is a creep show. And it was I'd never seen anything like it. That the bunch of 17-year-olds who were wearing not enough clothing that were already at the point of no return, mentally and physically. It was an eye opener. But I'm glad that when I saw it, I said, "Oh, Tracy was talking about this stage."
Yes, it was crazy. I mean, I spend some time there, but it gets to be too much. You're stepping over throw up, like it's like too much.
Yeah.
But I was lucky also to be the self-appointed reporter to follow Rahm Emanuel around the festival. So I was far away from the Perry stage because he was nowhere near the Perry stage.
What was his favorite show?
I don't know what his favorite show was, but I definitely watched him rocking out to a couple of acts, and I got him doing some head bobbing to Jacob Banks, who is this British singer-songwriter who was out there. It was very odd because I spotted him with Rumor Willis, who is Bruce Willis and Demi Moore's kid. You know, if you're thinking about who would Rahm Emanuel hang out with at Lollapalooza, maybe that's not your first thought.
Tracy Swartz is the ink columnist for Chicago Tribune. She joins us every Friday to talk about reality television and a little bit of Lollapalooza. Tracy, thanks so much. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.
Coming up, we're going to play Never Have I Ever, 312-981-7200. I said Never Have I Ever seen Bachelor in Paradise. Never have I ever gone golfing. We did that one. Never have I ever seen, what's the Marlon Brando movie with the sled? Yeah, what's Rosebud?
Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane. Never seen that movie. I know. You're surprised, aren't you? I haven't seen the biggest movie in history.
Well, I was surprised by Marlon Brando.
Oh, he's not in that? Oh, no, I'm thinking
on the waterfront or something?
No, not Marlon Brando. Who am I thinking of?
Orson Welles?
Orson Welles, duh.
Not
same thing.
Marlon Brando.
Same
thing. I'm up here yelling for him to turn my mic on.
Same thing. Same exact thing, just different ages. Marlon Brando turned into Orson Welles at one point. we will play Never Have I Ever coming up for prizes. We're giving away pizzas, 312-981-7200. I had a caller call in and say that the traffic on 90 is fine right now, and I had another caller saying it's always packed up like that. Today I was angry earlier because I had to go to – I went to a funeral in Mishawaka, Indiana today. It's my wife's aunt, actually her great aunt, Mary Floridia. She died this week. She was 91 years old. And when I was at the funeral today at the cemetery, I was charting the lineage of that family and back to the mid-19th century. And I realized what a special life she led. Mary Scarfo was her name. She came to this country on a boat, a liner, in 1938. She was 13 years old from Italy. She told stories throughout her life about how they had to lie down and keep quiet for fear of the boat being attacked or being bombed. She ended up at Ellis Island. She stayed on the Lower East Side while waiting for her dad, and her family settled in Mishawaka, Indiana. Mary didn't speak English, so the school put her in the third grade. She was 13 when she came in. Can you imagine that? As she got older, she and her older sister, Catherine, who also passed away at the age of 91, were set up with two of the Floridia brothers in the neighborhood. They married the brothers a month apart, had babies 2 weeks apart, and they lived their lives on the same block. How about that? Mary had an amazing smile and spirit, and she loved to tease with her thick Italian accent. She'd say, "Justin, you hardly ate anything. Justin, have some more. Justin, have another drink." Mary had a funny way of drinking. She didn't want people to know that she liked alcohol. So she would say funny things. She would say "I'm thirsty. Is anyone else thirsty? I'm so parched. I think I'll have a gin and tonic." And the family went along with it. She was a matriarch, and with that, she had to deal with the ups and downs of her family's life. For instance, her younger son, Vince, died early. In her later years, Mary lost her husband. She lost her hearing. She fell a couple times. But every time we visited her, she had a smile on her face. She teased me about eating and entertained us with her amazing personality. She was buried today in Mishawaka, the wake at St. Monica's Church, a church that she went to as a girl for the first time 78 years ago. And as I sat there and I listened to the Mass, I listened to the priest and sang along to the book, I imagined the 13-year-old Mary looking up at the decorated ceiling, knowing the sky's the limit. So Mary, you'll be missed. It was a great ceremony and everything in between, and what a life. And it's interesting, too, because I feel like when we talk about all the issues that come up with immigration and the ebb and flow of this country, I think about Mary and Catherine and that family and what they endured to come to this country in 1938 to find a better life and how they made my life better by doing so. All right, coming up, we will get Rob's news and we will continue to we're going to play Never Have I Ever, 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Yes, it's time to play Never Have I Ever here in the Download, our new Friday night staple. 312-981-7200. This is a very simple game, and it's a lot of fun. Never Have I Ever blank, right? It seems to work out pretty well, and we've already got some great stuff that's coming in. We can start. Why don't we get right to it? What do you think, Pete? We get right to it tonight. We're playing for pizza. I've got three available. What do you think? Should we give them? It's Friday, right? Two available. I've got two available. So top two Never Have I Evers, judged by me and Pete. Judged by you, Pete. You could be the judge. You will get the pizzas. 312-981-7200. All right, let me get this. I'm getting my piece of papers in front of me. We're ready to rock. All right, we ready? 773 starts us off. Never have I ever gotten a Brazilian bikini wax or eaten a Cadbury chocolate egg. Wow, that's a double. That's going to be a hard one to beat right off the bat. What a combo. You kind of... Never have I ever gotten a Brazilian bikini wax or eating a Cadbury chocolate egg. Wow, that's balance. I love that one. I'm going to put that, let me write that one down. Brazilian Cadbury egg. Got it. All right. 773 says, never have I ever had gin. Oh, interesting. Not a gin person, huh? Interesting. All right. Alcohol is always going to be, always shows up on these ones. And again, I think that that's interesting because I think, you know, I think in my life I've found myself sampling different alcohols. I don't think I've become like they're my favorites, but I've had gin, right? But it's also a preference thing at a certain point, and it's almost like television shows and food are harder to win in this category because you're like, never have I ever had this because I don't like it, or never have I ever seen Friends. You're like, eh, I know, I get it. That is peculiar because it was such a popular show, but it's also a taste thing, right? Let's go to Judy. Kick it off, Judy. Judy, give us your never have I ever.
Never had a reefer.
You've never had a reefer?
Yeah.
You mean like drugs, marijuana? Is that what you mean?
Right.
Well, I could tell that you've never done it just by the fact that you since never had a reefer, because usually we never had reefer, right? There's like an extra consonant there. You put a
okay.
You put an article in the wrong spot. Never had. You sound. You know what you sound like? An undercover cop.
Not really.
No.
No.
He just comes up to the kids at the lake, and they're like, "Hey, I never. Hey, you guys got any reefer?" Right?
Not a high.
Yeah. Thanks, Judy. That's a good one.
Bye.
Hey, guys, you guys blowing some reefer? Yeah. But that, she's accurate. She's authentic. I'd say that Judy's probably really never smoked marijuana since the way she said it, right? 312-981-7200. 708 says, never have I ever cooked an artichoke. Wow. I don't think I've ever cooked an artichoke. I've eaten an artichoke. But I don't know if I've ever cooked one. That yeah. 773 says, never have I ever held a baby or been to a wedding or a funeral. Wow. I feel like we had the never have I ever held a baby one before. But to say you've never held a baby, never been to a wedding, nor a funeral. That's to say that you have not been invited to a wedding and you have chosen not to go to a funeral because you don't get invited to a funeral. Unless you think you do, and that's why you've never been. Keep waiting in for the invite and it never shows up and you're like, well, I guess Frank didn't like me. No, it doesn't work that way. Because, I mean, it's never at a wedding, you're like, well, okay, but never a funeral is to tell us that no one you know has ever died, but really what you're saying is people have died, you just gone to the funeral. Now you've just said not, and maybe you emotionally aren't into that. You're missing out. It's really, today the funeral I went to today is a Catholic. It's a very traditional Catholic, the mass, everything. And I have to say, I enjoy the tradition of that. There's a lot in there that I'm like, it's all religious. It's all about Jesus. It's all about God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's rarely about the person. I'm the kind of guy that when I die, I want my headshot, like almost like when a celebrity, I want my headshot on the back, like blown up.
Yeah.
And I want everyone to
talk about how great you are. Yeah,
please. And I thought it was like today they didn't do
that as personal.
No, there's a lot of singing from the hymnal, and you can open up your hymnal. To page 207. I'll pass. And then you do it, and then you're just like, you can do all four verses of this one. And then you just go.
Yeah. Anything after the second verse in church, man, yeah. That's... I was an altar boy for a number of years.
Really?
Yeah. And serving funerals, it was nice because, you know, I mean, I appreciate the actual service, but I didn't like it because weddings... you get tips. The altar boys would get tips.
Funerals, they're not pulling.
They're not pulling any cash out. Yeah. So
here's what I had I will say this, and it was nice and family involved, and try to keep it anonymous, even though I just told everybody who she was. I didn't think for a woman who went to that church when she was 13 years old, died at 91, 1940, rolling in that same building. Right. Think about that. Blows my mind. To then have the priest, who's a newer guy,
yeah,
essentially be like, she was good, and she liked food, and she was good.
Yeah.
I was like, how about a date?
Yeah.
How about throw in...
Just like he took a quick look at her Facebook page, looked under likes, and then just like started rolling them off. He didn't really get to...
Right, but and then I asked the question, and I got the answer, but I'm like, is this free? Is a funeral free in a church? I don't know. I don't know. And then I think my dad was like, "Meh, it might be, but you gotta tip the priest or something like that." And I was like, for the amount of money that she put into that church for being there since 1940 and the plate being around, they should be like, "Yo, man, you free reign of this place."
Yeah, it's too bad that they didn't have somebody that knew her a little bit better.
Yeah. The thing is, she's outlived the priest.
Yeah.
It's not the priest's fault.
Yeah.
But I think that I would take it, if I were going to be that, if that was my job, I'd be like, Mary was born in, I would go right into like, yeah. I'd tell the whole story.
Such a good story.
Yeah. But instead it was kind of like, and she was good. And she liked food and God. And God loves food. And food is good. I was like, wow. It's very, very priesty. I was like, whoa, okay. I get it. Anyway, 312-981-7200. We're playing Never Have I Ever. I got a ton. They just came in. What we'll do, we'll take a break so we stay on time. We'll come back, and I will rapid fire these. They're great tonight. Stay with us. We're playing Never Have I Ever. Let us go to Lake Geneva Dan. I love that name, Lake Geneva Dan.
Yeah, man.
I love that name. I love Lake Geneva.
I've never, ever bought a cup of coffee. Not Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, nothing. I make the coffee at home. And the second thing is, I've never ever changed a diaper. And I don't plan on doing it anytime.
Have you had kids?
No.
Yeah, well then, I don't see any reason you would be changing it, unless it's your own, like a little bit later in life, right?
I'll let you go, buddy.
But hey, thanks, man. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. I like the cup of coffee one, man. That's a, wow. You know what that is? That's discipline. I got a coffee machine at home, right? We all got a coffee machine at home. But half the time I'm like, I'll just roll out and get this at the Dunkin' Donuts or whatever. To say you've never had a cup of coffee that you paid for, that's pretty good. 727 says, never have I ever been able to tell left from right without the thumb and pointy finger trick. There you go. 847 says, never have I ever had my correct weight on my driver's license. So what does that mean? Do you mean that it's high or lower? Like, are you tricking the state of Illinois or Indiana? Are they just asking for that number and you're like, I'll just give them a random one. And we'll say 120.
I always go 5'9".
You do?
Yeah. I round up about an inch.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I feel like, I guess I probably do the same thing on the weight. I'm sure my weight's not the same on my driver's license. I don't know. Gladys, give us your never have I ever.
Oh,
go ahead.
This is Gladys calling.
Hi, Gladys.
I never bought a lottery ticket.
You never bought a lottery ticket?
Right.
You're so lucky.
I know. I think I saved a lot of money.
I was going to say, Gladys, that's really your, it should have been never have I ever wasted my money.
Right.
People who've won lotteries call me and be like, you're wrong, but... Every time I've played the lottery, there's been only like one or two times where I'm like, I got a number, I got a second number, and then I didn't get a third. It never works. Thanks, Gladys.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Rich, what do you got?
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
I have never paid a finance charge on my credit card, ever.
Wow. So what you mean is that you pay for something on your credit card, and before the first bill comes back, you pay it off completely. Yeah.
I am what they would consider a deadbeat customer.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm a bad customer.
You should be a leader. You should be our next politician. You should be the mayor of Chicago.
I don't know about that.
Right? I mean, that's what we need. We need someone who's like who cares about paying off the credit card in the first month.
I'm not crooked enough to be a mayor.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Rich.
I wouldn't get the job for that just for that reason.
Just for that reason.
Yeah.
Well, you can change the system, buddy. That's what we like. All right, thanks, man.
Yeah. Good evening.
There you go, 312-981-7200. 815 says, never have I ever been in a physical or verbal fight. I'm 39. Wow. Not even a verbal fight? I feel like I'm getting 3 verbal fights a day. There's the crosswalk in front of Michigan Avenue right here, and if a car blocks it in rush hour, it's a verbal fight. Wow. The last two, Rich and 815. You guys should change society for the better. You should be the new leaders. Physical fight, I could see. I haven't been in too many physical fights. I think I've documented them all here on the download. But verbal fights, yeah. 773. Never have I ever been able to wink. You're like when my 10-year-old son, when he started learning how to wink, it was really funny to watch him do it. So maybe you could start a YouTube channel, 773, in which you just try to learn how to wink at your age. And I'll bet you'll get a lot of likes. Because it's funny watching someone distort their eye trying to figure out how to wink. Mary Jo, yes. Give me your never have I ever.
I have never ever logged in online.
What? Like you're off the grid entirely?
Yes, by choice.
Are you like the lady I saw in Florida who also like gets her water from a tree?
No, I just water from my tree. No, I just I chose not to be connected because I don't want to be. I just don't want to be That's connected crazy. To all of that BS.
It is a lot of BS. It's also, I mean, I'm surprised because, I mean, a lot of the world has become digitized in the way that you can pay your bill. You can do a lot of different things online that you couldn't do 10 years ago to help your life.
I'm totally aware of that, but I also I don't trust, especially listening to all the stuff that happens.
Yeah.
You got to watch this for this scam or that scam or whatever, and I just chose not to. Plus, I didn't want to get hooked on to. Oh, I got to check my email every 2 seconds
like
and all the rest
it.
Of that.
I love it, and I would put you with Rich with the credit card, and I'd also the idea of never getting in a verbal fight. I feel like the three of you could change the world for a better place, just like that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
No, I mean I'm with you. Here I'll give you an idea what the internet's like. You ready? So
okay.
Essentially, you know a guy who comes to your house and tries to sell you a vacuum.
I don't answer the door.
Right. Well, there's like 1,000 of those guys a day online.
Right.
That's all it is. And you can't keep your door closed. You can't do the Sebastian Maniscalco bit where you pretend like you're not home. Right.
I understand. And yeah. I have the caller ID on the phone.
Right.
And I don't answer the phone
if I don't recognize
the number.
Yeah, that's your internet. Caller ID. You're good.
Yeah.
Mary Jo, thank you. Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Wow.
Bye-bye.
I would give Mary Jo, I'd put her on the short list. You say never have you been online? Because last week, I think the winner was never have I ordered anything online. But to say that you've never been online, that's deep off-the-grid type stuff. There was a story I saw in Florida when I was last time I was in Fort Myers about a woman who was like suing. She was in a fight with the city because she was off the grid entirely. She like was no electricity, no gas, no water. She was just doing everything by like collecting pond water and stuff like that. And they're like, you can't do that. And she's like, the hell I can't. That was the story. And I was there for a week and it was like the main story every night of the week. So
how do you do that without air conditioning?
You know what? If you want a job, Rob, doing being an investigative reporter in Fort Myers, you could do a week-long series. Because I think that was the second question asked. Isn't it get hot in there? It was like...
I mean, I'm hot just thinking about it.
Yeah, well, look it up. It was Pulitzer Prize-winning work by the Sanibel Island crew. All right, we're playing Never Have I Ever here on 720 WGN. We got the second half coming up. I got Don. I got a ton of texts. We're going to get to everybody tonight. That's my challenge. Never have I ever left anybody out. All right, we're doing it here on the download. Stay with us.
Never, 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 never.
Never have I ever. 312-981-7200. Download here. Justin Kaufman. It's until 11. Patty takes over at 11. Let's get to it. Let's rapid fire. Let's go to Donna. Donna, never have I ever.
Never have I ever been able to get my Chinese food order right. Never.
Wait, they don't get it right or you don't get it right? They don't get it right.
It doesn't matter if you order chicken chop suey, you get chicken souyang. If you order vegetable fried rice, you get vegetable chop suey. It never fails.
Do you,
no matter
Donna, do
where
you, I was
you,
gonna say, are you, maybe it's the maybe you have a problem with one restaurant. Are you trying
no,
a different restaurant?
Drive through, pick up, delivery, it's always the same. And I fall for it every time. I think, oh, wow. I'm going to try this. It's going to be great. I get something different.
Well, maybe if you go in with the mindset that it's a potpourri or it's just a grab
it's a
bag.
Conspiracy. They're going to drive us crazy is what they're going to do.
There you go. Thanks, Don. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
A big Chinese food conspiracy. They're going to drive us crazy. I know what'll get. I know what'll get Donna. I'll switch her order up. All right, let's go, Jeannie. Sorry.
Hello.
Jeannie, never have I ever...
ever been to a White Castle.
Yeah, you know, and, go ahead.
And growing up, I was about three blocks from one at Belmont in Harlem.
What? Why didn't you ever go over there? You're only three blocks away.
You know what? It just never, just the smell.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just.
I agree. I think we had one like this a couple weeks ago because I remember talking about going to the White Castle kind of on a whim, almost like a dare. The one in Chicago on Ridge and, what is it?
Like Ridge and Peterson over there?
Yeah. It was one of those where we're like, hey, we'll go. Let's go. We never go to that one. And that was that. Fun experience when we got in there was not so fun. It was late night and there was a lot of guys just hanging around.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, this is the food was not so
good. And I've also never eaten a Pop-Tart.
Oh, interesting. You should remedy that and call next week and see what you think. Just go to Target and get one.
Right? Well, I should do that because my kids are always like, Mom, we're the only kids in the world that never get to eat them.
Jeannie, don't fall for that. That sounds like something I told my mom. I will say this. My mom was very into health food when we were growing up, all that kind of stuff. And I remember one time there was one cereal that kind of was on, like it was in the health area, but it was called O's or something like that, right? So we got it and it was a little sugary. And then I tried to up my game where I went back and I said, you know, I'd like to get this Captain Crunch. And my mom was like, no, you can't have the Captain Crunch. I'm like, well, take a look on the back. The O's that you've been buying for us has a 17 grams of sugar. And as you can see, 17 grams of sugar here. And you know what she did? She said, well, we're not getting the O's anymore.
Oh.
So I was like, oh, that's not fair. You're not playing fair. So I learned that lesson right there. So the next time I said, we're the only kids in that don't get a Pop-Tart. And you say, well, I'm also taking away whatever else you give them.
Well, and even the kids, I always cooked breakfast for them. They never got cereal unless we were camping. So they were all thrilled, you know, when you went camping and you could buy those individual boxes turn into your own bowl. Yeah.
Oh, I'll bet they want the cooked right now. I'll tell you that. I'll take the cooked. All right. Thanks, Jeannie.
Yes,
appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. There you go. 312-981-7200. All right. 269 says, on the fights. Me neither in the last day. That's how I feel. 630 says, never have I ever been able to climb the rope all the way to the top in gym class, and I was very athletic. Are you kidding me? I could never do that. Has anyone ever done that? Ever climbed that rope all the way to the top?
No.
That's ridiculous. I'm with you on this one. Never ever been able to climb the rope. I never did that either. I got about halfway, and I'm like, all right, what's the point? Give me a B. Give me a C+. We're good to go.
Some of the WGN folks went out to the WOA. Yeah, I did.
You did? The WOA
zone.
I was going to go, but then
where you do a water-based obstacle course.
Yeah, in Lake Michigan, right?
In Lake Michigan, in Whiting, Indiana. Yeah, it's loads of fun. But so, yeah, you climb a wall, you know, a wall with a rope. But, you know, it's completely wet.
and rubber and whatever. It's, you know, it's like you're like slipping.
So is it like Battle of the Network Stars, but in the lake?
Yeah.
Oh, that's I want to go so bad.
It's still there. It's open until and it's I mean, it's reasonable. You're out there for an hour, which is enough time because you're tired and you're like you're right. Wobbling.
How's the chromium level? Was it okay?
I'm a little under the weather.
Oh no! Don't start with
me. Yeah. Remember we went we did
the kayaking. Yeah. River. Don't start. All right, I don't want to hear it. You ruined me for the night. All right. 312-981-7200. 815 says never have I ever been able to whistle.
What about the fancy, the two finger in the mouth?
I can't do that one. Right?
You know the the loud
Yeah, I can't do that one. I'm sure if I put, maybe that'll be something I'll do this fall. Learn how to do that whistle.
Yeah, we'll save it for a New Year's resolution.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a good one.
815 says never have I ever had a threesome. Ooh, getting randy. Okay, that's. I love that when someone's sitting at home going, what have I not done? What would be relatable? What can I tell Chicagoland about that I have not done? Oh, I know.
I don't want to think about what he's watching on TV right now.
Okay. Never have I ever been to a Comic-Con. All right. Well, we don't have the tickets tonight, so stop sucking up. Just the pizzas. 773 says update on winking. The person is 30. I told the person earlier that they said never have I ever been able to wink. I said, well, learn how, but do the process in a YouTube channel, and then distort your face as you're trying to figure it out. You'll make money off of trying to learn how to wink. It'll look so foolish, but you will make so much money. Never have I ever had a credit card. Never have I ever completed 18 holes of golf without swearing. Okay. Never have I ever won at Never Have I Ever. Okay. All right. Again. 847, this is Ed. Ed says, never have I ever had sex with a neighbor. Again. I don't know if that's on the. Like, never have I ever is fun, like the golfing or any of the other things. Like, never have I ever. Here's one. Never have I ever used a porta potty. Oh, that's relatable. Never ever had sex with a neighbor. You're like, I don't know if that's not a shared. I don't think there's a lot of people out there. A lot of people say, yeah, I'm with you, Ed. I haven't either. When you get into like the topic of never have I ever with sexual topics, it gets a little weird where people are like, never have I ever put a mask on. All right. That's your business, man. That's your business. 773 says, never have I ever watched hockey. That's because you listened to it here on 720 WGN. Never have I ever left the tri-state area. Ooh. The tri-state area. Isn't the tri-state area an East Coast thing?
Yeah, it's like the New York area.
Yeah, so what tri-state area would be here would be Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin?
Yeah, I guess so. Michigan, maybe? Illinois, Michigan,
Illinois,
Indiana?
Michigan, Indiana? Or do you throw in Iowa? There's a lot of states that would be like, order, I want to be included in the tri-state area.
Maybe you could just make it whatever. Maybe he's been to Wisconsin. He can make it whatever he wants.
Yeah, right. 847 piggybacks on your altar boy stuff, saying working a funeral was great, especially because you got to get out of class. Today, the altar boys at the funeral today, they were all kids who were in their neon gym clothes because it's a Friday and there's no school. So when they had their white robes on, one of the kids had his bright blue sneakers on. I was like, you can't figure that out? You ain't getting white shoes to wear?
Yeah, well, that you know, and I concur. That was always a good deal when you got out of class to serve a funeral. But oh man, Sister Maureen, man, if you showed up with, you know, she would drag you out of there, and she'd find somebody else with regular shoes. You cannot wear gym shoes to a funeral.
It was really funny because those kids were out of the altar boy outfits in about 2 minutes. Like I went over to the car and got in the car to get in the funeral procession, and I looked over, and the kids are already like got their basketball. They're ready to rock. They're out. I'm like, don't you have to sweep up? Don't you have to do, like, don't you have to lock the church?
Clean, no? Yeah, like empty oils and whatnot.
Yeah, they're already in their neon cool shorts with a neon stripe down the side. I'm like, those are dumb shorts, kids. I was going to say something. I didn't say anything. 630 says, never have I ever chosen to watch a Kardashian, nor how to spell it. Okay. You're missing out, man. There's some good drama in there. If you like drama and butts, you'll love Kardashians. If you like drama, butts, and weird 10-second cutaways to L.A. freeways with EDM music underneath, you're going to love the Kardashians. You'll love it. 815 says, hello. I don't live in the area, so please give the prize to someone else if I win. Love that start. The confidence, it's brimming. Never have I ever been intoxicated, smoked pot, ridden a horse, built up enough courage to look Chuck Norris in the eyes, let alone challenge him to a round of never have I ever, because he has done everything. Game over before it has begun. Yeah, the judge is unimpressed. He didn't like your meta Chuck Norris.
Nah. Nah.
All right, 312-981-7200. We'll take our last break here. We'll come back. We'll wrap up, and we will give away two pizzas tonight for Never Have I Ever. Stay with us. (312) 981-7200. We're playing Never Have I Ever. 815 says, never have I ever watched 1 minute of the O.J. Simpson trial. I'm 55 years old. Well, I hate to tell you, but you missed it. It's 20 years ago. I know it seems like it was yesterday because that's all anyone ever talks about, but it was 22 years ago. Anyway, I don't want to give you any spoilers of what happened, but you probably figured out.
You can watch the FX show.
I was going to say, just Google Cuba Gooding Jr. and John Travolta, and you'll find it. 773 says, never have I ever drank bottled water. What? How do you not drink bottled water? I guess that's a thing. It's kind of like the same idea of never have I ever drank a cup of coffee, paid for a cup of coffee. Like you get into a discipline, you're like, I don't drink tap water. Are you a guy, does your fridge have a filtered water thing, Pete?
Yeah, it does.
Do you use that?
No.
Do you just go right out of tap?
I go right out of tap.
So do I.
Chicago has delicious water.
I know.
It's great, frankly, as Bert Nateris would say. Cold glass of water.
And it helps with my cholesterol with all the weird pills that are in there. And I'm sure all of the prescription pills that are in Chicago's drinking supply, one of them is a cholesterol pill. Right? Never have I ever been in an automobile accident. I'm 39 years old, 815. There you go. Yeah, knock on wood, right? 773 said, didn't know that WGN played hockey. What? You know, the best hockey team in the entire NHL plays in Chicago, the Chicago Blackhawks, and it broadcasts on WGN, 720 WGN, when the season starts in September. And it goes till probably this year, June, because they're going all the way. I like what the Blackhawks did this offseason. Once the Blackhawks get started back up in September, it's going to be on. I like it. They're bringing the band back together, the whole bit. Yeah, but check it out. It's an acquired taste, but I love radio broadcasts of hockey. Weidman and Murray are tremendous. The excitement that they have on and what Judd does with the pregame and halftime, all that kind of stuff, it's really great. Anyway, they're coming up in September. 331, tri-state areas, Chicago, southwest Wisconsin, and northwest Indiana. As in the Tri-State Tollway. Yawn. I'm just joking. 630, never have I ever been able to stay on a diet. Okay, that's probably. 815, never have I ever had a foursome. All right, good bit. Never have I ever been called buddy or sport. Hey, sport. Sport, I get buddy. I say buddy all the time. Hey, buddy. Sport, I don't get that one. 414 says, this is Mary. Mary says, I'm 72 years old and I've never seen any animal mating. All right, that's going to do it. That's the end. That's wrapping it up, Mary. You can the last word. All right, I got the semifinals here. We are giving away a pizza, Lou Malnati's gift certificate. We're going to give away two of these. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. All right, here's what I got, Pete. You ready for this? Let's try to take these from semifinals to finalists. Ready? 773 says, never have I had a Brazilian bikini wax and a Cadbury chocolate egg.
Mm-hmm. That's a good combination. Good
708 says, never have I used a porta potty. 331, this is Lake Geneva Dan. He says, never have I ever paid for a cup of coffee. Rich says, never have I ever paid an interest charge on a credit card. Mary Jo says, never have I ever been online. And 815 says, never have I ever been in a physical or verbal fight. So let's say those are the six that I picked. So I would say porta potty, we can maybe, okay.
It's a good one.
It's a good one. My suggestion, if you're getting it down to three, because there's five left, would be maybe pay for a cup of coffee goes, because I think we did a Starbucks one last week, right?
Yeah, that one seems to come up every now and again.
And then maybe the credit card pay interest, because that's a thing of like, I've never paid interest on a credit card. All right, so you pay your bill every week.
Kind of a humble brag.
Okay. Humble brag. All right, so the top three. You ready to give two away here?
Yeah, let's do it.
These three. This is going to be like America's Funniest Home Videos. We're like, number three! Number three, okay, here are the three. Ready? Brazilian and Cadbury egg. That's one. Never been online. That's two. And never been in a physical or verbal fight. I'm 39 years old. So which of those? So one of those, two of those three are going to win. So why don't you say, yeah. So
just, number two, I would say never been online.
All right, there you go, Mary Jo. The only problem is I don't know how you're going to redeem this gift certificate.
Yeah. She has a phone, so we can figure that out. I won't email her.
We'll just punch in this code? Oh,
Klondike 454.
No, I was just going to say, go online. No, you can't do that. Punch in this guy. Can't do that. You download the app. Can't do. Oh, jeez. I don't know how you're going to get this pizza. All right. Good job, Mary Jo. And what do you got for number one? That's a good one. He's a tough one, man.
Yeah.
All three deserve a prize, but you either got Brazilian and Cadbury egg, which is one, which is what makes it funny, or never been in a physical or verbal fight, which is hard to believe, but is pretty amazing if that's the case.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go. I mean, I do love the comedy for the comedy purposes that, yeah.
Right.
But kudos. Official kudos for the, right. But I'm going to have to go with the physical
or verbal fight. There you go. You win. 815. Never been in a physical or verbal fight. And also Mary Jo, never been online. 773, the Brazilian and the Cadbury egg. It's pretty awesome. It's awesome. But next time. All right. Never have I ever. Another great one. That's going to do it tonight. All right, so I'm off Monday and Tuesday. Very close attention to the Middle Wisconsin newspapers to see if I die whitewater rafting.
Make sure you wear your helmet.
Yeah, so just check that out. I don't know what the papers are up there, like the Eagle Beaver Gazette. I don't know what it's called, whatever the paper is.
Did you ever see Deliverance?
Oh, dear.
Have fun.
It's Wisconsin. You'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Just keep paddling. Oh, hold on.
Patty Vasquez is up next here. What do you got tonight on the show?
Well, you know, it's Freak Out Friday. Yeah. And we also have an individual from the ACLU who's going to talk about the Laquan McDonald case and the recent developments that the judge is allowing the conversation between Jason Van Dyke and his union rep. And that's going to be allowed. That'll be very interesting. And we are, let's talk about also the truth about health care with Dr. Daphne Scott.
The truth.
There's got to be the truth is out there.
Hey, the truth is out there.
It is somewhere. Well, have a great trip. Be safe.
I will. I'll keep be back on Wednesday. Thank
Excellent.
You.